cannot take our pride.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome, small people. Hi, Jolene.
And, hi, Peter. And many people may not know what you're speaking
of. We'll tell them in a minute. Yeah.
It's not our words.
No, it's not.
Not our words.
It's actually the chairman of BP, Carl Henrik Swanberg. He said earlier in the week, "We care about small people."
Yes, those little people over there.
They are the big
people.
They
matter too.
We are the small people. Well, the small people are getting together, and we're going to, like we've done throughout history,
mm-hmm.
every once in a while, the small people get their backs up, and they say, "We're not going to take it." Isn't that a song, too?
It is.
Yeah. Twisted Sister.
Yeah.
No less. We're not going to take it.
Anymore.
And this week, this is it, folks.
You've been building it up, Peter.
Right. History begins in Detroit. The resistance is afoot. 20,000 activists are going to be coming to the Motor City, Detroit. And it's called the United States Social Forum. Not a dating deal.
No.
But
this is serious
social
stuff.
Social in the, you know, the political, economic stuff. You know, that what makes our country and our lives tick. The big people have control of it all. The small people, the us, don't. We have no power. Remember, in fact, we play that at the beginning, John Lennon singing, Power to the People. Unfortunately, that song's about 40 years old, and things have been going in the opposite direction. Well, it's very possible that the resistance and the renewal and, should we say the R word? I guess those teabaggers are always talking about revolution, right? Except they're talking about right-wing revolution.
We're talking about real revolution.
Yeah, they're talking about, and a right-wing revolution is fascism, right?
Yes.
So, but you know, when the teabaggers get together, they'll come to Nashville. There'll be 700 people there, and in that time, remember, just a few months ago, they had 700 people, and they had 1,000 registered media people.
Oh, yeah, more than the actual attendees.
Yeah, so here.
Which will be the opposite here this week in Detroit.
Yeah.
Just my crazy guess.
Well, I don't think there'll be 700 people from the media coming. They'll probably ignore it. There's already been some negative publicity from the usual suspects. Usually I don't like to give people credit on the right. I usually rarely even mention their name.
Well, this isn't credit. Are you talking about this Detroit News?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Nolan Finley. What a dick.
I mean,
what a piece
really,
of work.
Oh, my friend had a better word for him. A ginormous, I can't remember. It was, maybe I can't say it on the air.
All right. But here he says, commentary, Detroit hosts leftist cavalcade. I like that. 20,000 of us getting together for the U.S. Social Forum. And in fact, well, he's calling it the U.S. Social Justice Forum. He doesn't even know what it's called.
Exactly.
But by the way,
get your facts.
Yeah, you can go to USSF 2010. USSF2010.org. Why is there a fly on this piece of paper I have? Hello. Welcome to the Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan show. Get out of here, man.
So there is one particular paragraph in this article that is my favorite. I'm very proud of this paragraph. But
well,
the names he called us.
Yeah, the forum is a hootenanny of pinkos, environuts, peaceniks, Luddites, old hippies, Robin Hoods, and urban hunters and gatherers. In other words, a microcosm of the Obama administration. But he says, there. Mission is to tear down Wall Street and use the bricks to pave a main street where everyone lives in racial and social harmony. Nobody has too little or too much, and food, shelter, transportation, education, clothing, and cell phones are inalienable rights. Well, other than cell phones.
Right.
Well, there's going to be
a real nut.
Well, so there's 20,000 people going to be here in Detroit. And it begins, well, it's already in many ways
been happening, yes.
But there are things happening tomorrow, and we're going to talk with somebody right now, and as a matter of fact, who is making a lot of stuff happen and always has been for the last quite a few years. And she is Medea Benjamin. She's one of the co-founders of Global Exchange, a wonderful organization. Go to globalexchange.org. and she is here in Detroit for a joyful ceremony to bury the Hummer.
With Code Pink.
With Code Pink.
That's who she's running with
that's
these
right.
days.
That's
yeah.
right. I'm remiss in not mentioning.
It's okay. That's why I'm here.
Yes. Without you, I don't know what I'd do. Medea Benjamin, welcome to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan.
Well, thank you. When you were reading out the list of what we are, the Pinkos and the old hippies, I kind of felt right at home.
Yeah, yes. You fit right in, Medea.
Hey, Medea, do you remember there was, I can't remember what song, but there was an old Jefferson Airplane song, and it was from the 60s, and at one point, Grace Slick sings, "Whatever you say we are," right? Hey, well,
I'm too young to remember that, Peter, but it sounds good to me.
Well, come on. We got classic rock stations around. But Medea Benjamin, you and Code Pink are going to bury a Hummer? Tell us about this.
You know, we've had a campaign against the Hummer since before Code Pink started, and I was still at Global Exchange. We used to put out parking tickets that we'd put on Hummers that were, you know, violation of the rights of the planet. And
okay.
we talked about how the Hummer got worse gas mileage than the Model T Ford, which is now almost 100 years ago, and that it was...
Are you there with me? Wow. Is it something I said?
I doubt it.
Well, for one thing, take the phones off of hold.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. Well, let's do this. Let's see if we...
Put her on hold.
Yeah. Well, I don't think she was on hold. She was gone.
Hey, Jade.
Jade, yeah.
Can you give her a little ring back? That'd
313-298-WRIF. You talk bad about the Hummer. That's what happens. Medea Benjamin from Code Pink. And you can Google Code Pink, Google the United States Social Forum, Google, I don't know. You can go to Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com, and get all this as well. But we're talking about the U.S. Social Forum that is going to happen June 22nd to the 26th.
It's already going on, and there's, like we said, this event tomorrow that we'll continue talking about as soon as we get her back on the phone. Also, Tuesday, there's a big protest,
march.
And we'll be in attendance at that.
Yeah, this is going to be a march of any, I don't know how many. It's going to be anywhere from several thousand to tens of thousands of people. And if you've never been to anything like that, if you just have this rage about what's happening to this country and this world, what's happened to you, one of the small people, as the BP chairman has said, and you have this anger at the big people who have screwed everything up. All right, let's see. We have Medea Benjamin back. Medea, hi. Was it something I said?
No, I was talking on and on and on, though.
A little disconnect.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. We were just about, you were saying that the Global Exchange had a campaign long before Code Pink was formed against the Hummer. One of the things that you say, that the Hummer was the symbol of a macho gas-guzzling, war-glorifying era that is thankfully coming to an end.
Well, that's right. That's why we're very joyful in this burial of the Hummer, because we feel like the fact that people weren't buying this car anymore means that they either couldn't afford it or they got some consciousness. And I mean, I think it was a variety of things. The spike in gas prices in 2007, you know, some people also attribute it to the fact that the Hummer was supposed to be kind of invincible. And then, unfortunately, on our TV screens, we started seeing all the Humvees in Iraq being blown up. And suddenly it wasn't so glorious to be riding around in your Hummer. I mean, who knows? I'm sure there'll be people who will write history books about the death of the Hummer. But all we know is that it's a military vehicle turned into a civilian vehicle in 1992, thanks to Arnold Schwarzenegger. It should never have been a civilian vehicle, and that we're glad that it's not rolling off the production lines anymore.
Well, tell us, Medea Benjamin, what's about burying a Hummer? Where'd you get a Hummer?
We bought very cheaply a burned-out Hulk of a Hummer, and we talked to the folks in the Heidelberg Project.
What a perfect place.
For a prime corner of land,
yeah.
And they were very happy to accommodate us. So we're going to have the Hummer rolling in tomorrow, and we're going to work all day digging the hole for the Hummer and Then we're going to plant things in the Hummer, and we're going to have new life coming out of it. We're going to paint it pink. We're going to have butterflies and bicycles around it, and we're going to show the death of the old macho, gas-guzzling, militaristic vehicle and the birth of something new.
Let me tell people that if they have never been to the Heidelberg Project, which is on the street that it's named for, Heidelberg, like Heidelberg, Germany, H-E-I-D-E-L-B-E-R-G, because there were so many Germans emigrated here in the 19th century, and it's off of Mount Elliott. Mount Elliott is a north-south street that's, if you take it all the way down, you go to Jefferson, you'd be right near Belle Isle. But again, if you're Googling everything while we're talking, Google Heidelberg Project. It essentially is sculptures, if you will, or art installations made of junk. And it's all the detritus, if you will, the junk, the garbage, the leftovers of consumer society made into statements. And this is a hell of a statement. Code Pink going to bury the Hummer. Now, and the phones aren't ringing. I should tell people they can call 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And maybe we could get some more Hummers donated, Medea.
I think one is plenty.
Yeah.
These things are thousands of pounds. Jeez.
Yeah.
But we do want your listeners to come and join us because it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll be there all day tomorrow from 10 in the morning till 6 at night. And then actually the rest of the week we'll be there just putting the finishing touches on things. But it'll be a lot of fun. We'll have dancing and singing, and we want to make these one of the New Orleans kind of funerals where people really have a good time, because the idea around this is that some things just are better off dying.
There you go. And I'll be there for the ceremony at 4 o'clock. I have a lot of work here to do at the station up until then, but I'm definitely, in other words, I'm getting out of the work, because if any of you would like to volunteer to help, I hope you have some mechanized manner of digging this hole, Medea Benjamin.
We do.
Good, good, good.
We're going to cheat a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. And but there's other stuff, planting flowers, and I think it's going to be an incredible morning and afternoon and a little bit into the evening. And the Heidelberg Project, which is on, I think it's off of Mac and Mount Elliott, which I've been there a number of times. I always take visitors. Have you ever been there, Medea?
Oh, yeah, I went today. I was
okay.
Kind of blown away by it.
Yeah, it is absolutely
wild, and the Hummer will be very fit right in there.
Okay.
Another piece of junk to add to all the junk.
All right, you can go to codepinkalert.org, codepinkalert.org, or just show up. Particularly, we need people that can help. Well, I'll see you down there.
Wonderful. And if people can't make it tomorrow, come anytime during the week, and we'll have another celebration on Saturday as well. So we're going to make a whole week of it. It'll be there as an installation for quite a while to come. And I appreciate being able to talk to both of you on my first night in Detroit. I'm very excited to be here.
Welcome to the Motor City.
We're glad you're here, Medea.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay. Thanks so much. Looking forward to it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, Medea Benjamin has traveled all over the world.
She's amazing.
She's always getting arrested in Congress because when you know, there's like hearings and these banksters are getting up there, or one of what's the woman, the shrimper? Well, we've interviewed her.
Oh, before. Diane Wilson.
The other day, she was in they were up there lying, the BP executives, and she poured oil over herself. She was, because her.
She's real hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this is.
I feel like a real lazy activist around these ladies.
Yeah. This is it. Folks, and I can't imagine how things could have been more crystallized by that remark by BP Chairman Carl Henrik Svanberg. We care about the small people. Now, you know, there's this this horrid, stupid book that I probably a lot of you have read and thought, oh yeah, this is about me. Atlas Shrugged, right? This is by Ayn Rand. It still sells about 800,000 copies.
Why must you bring her up?
Yeah, well, because she idolized these people. All the the people that have screwed up the environment, screwed up the economy, screwed up life on this planet. Those are the people that are the heroes of this this stupid book. I mean, it just is unbelievable. All right, let's see. Let's get some callers in this. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. This is Johnny in Davisburg. Hey, Johnny, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you, Peter?
We're doing good.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
Just kind of wanted to comment on the whole Hummer thing and all that,
sure.
And the gas and the prices. I'm a landscaper by trade, and I guess my point is a friend of mine years ago, actually, his parents were well-to-do, and long story short, he ended up with a Hummer, a newer one. And I'll tell you what, boy, we took that thing out in the woods, and we treated it pretty much like it needed to be treated and never drove in one again. You know, I mean, I'm totally on the same page with the guys on this.
Yeah, well,
nice.
You know, I think that most people are probably going to listen to this show and think, oh, this is an interesting program. But the real point of this is to get people down there. If you've never been on one of these mass marches, if you've
right.
never been at one of these, I mean, Davisburg's pretty far away,
I got to
tell you. And if you're working tomorrow, it's kind of tough. But these are things that happen once in a lifetime. And think about the periods in history, like the 1960s or the 1930s or stuff like that. We could be entering a period like this now because things are really in the crapper. And when your grandchildren say, I don't mean to you, Johnny, but to all of us say, what did you do during the tens or whatever we'd call this? Did you go to that big march in Detroit that started everything? And you go, no, I was watching television.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, with the economy and everything, I'm out here, we're out here busting our behinds trying to cut the grass and fighting the elements, and we just have to basically eat the gas prices, and we all know why they are the way they are, and it's just, it's outrageous. It's government over the little guy all the time.
Sure.
Same thing, different day.
Well, as I read just before, that's what the chairman of BP, he apologized, and he said that that because of the language difference, that what he meant, he cared about. What could he say? How do you clean up from that? He meant
exactly.
Up, yeah, like, you know, the
people who are hurt, who are in the industry, who are losing work.
Right, it's
because
like,
of
be
it.
About it. Yeah. Be about it, don't talk about it, and that's all they're doing is they're talking.
But
talk,
you know what? You know what it's like?
Talking and yachting. That's
Johnny,
what they're doing.
At BP saying they're sorry is like a drunk driver after he's killed somebody saying, oh, I'm so sorry this happened.
Right.
Well, the actions prior to what caused the tragedy is what's important. And most drunk drivers, I'm not letting them off any hook, but they don't make a conscious decision to, well, maybe they do, they get in the car. But these are guys that sit in a board room and say, we're going to skimp on safety aspects. So this is Murder Incorporated. These guys are corporate criminals, and some of them, you know what would really deter this kind of action again? Little jail time for these guys. Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. We're out here trying to mow lawns, and now they're doing, you know, the state has put regulations on the you know, your DOT inspections on your lawn trucks, this, that, and the other. And every time you turn your head, somebody's getting pulled over. And, you know, a lot of the times they have reason to pull them over. But, you know, if you got a light out on a trailer, this, that, or the other, so you really got to watch it. I mean, it's all about however they can make money off you. That's the way I look at it. So,
there you go. All right, Johnny. Thanks for calling.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate
it. You know what's worse than a Hummer, just a Hummer on its own?
What?
A Hummer with truck nuts.
I wonder.
I remember seeing the big Hummer on Woodward with the truck nuts dangling. I thought, this guy has serious issues.
313-298.
Sorry, I had to go there.
President Obama gave a speech on Tuesday defending his efforts against the country's worst environmental disaster. And what we're in now may be the good old days. I don't want to just, you know, say things are going to get worse, but you know what? They might get worse. They might. The Gulf may be a dead sea. And for some reason or other, I mean, he came up with this vague call for some sort of new energy policy, rather than saying we have to get off oil immediately. because bills are built into this. He called for a Gulf Coast restoration plan and oil spill study commission. Hey, and a reminder that the Secretary of Energy won a Nobel Prize in Physics. And then he made 17 references during his speech to God, prayer, blessings, or faith.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So have another bunch of meetings, form another commission, and meanwhile, look what's happening.
Yeah. And that whack job Republican, of course, that's probably redundant, isn't it? Representative Joe Barton, who is completely in bed with the oil companies, gets tons of money. Of course, so did the Bush, Obama campaign
right.
get the money from them. But he says he apologized to the chief executive officer, the CEO of VP Tony Hayward, and he says, I'm ashamed of what happened at the White House when Obama, the one thing he did was get this
$20 billion
in an escrow fund. He says, I'm ashamed of what happened in the White House.
Wow. Yeah, he called it a shakedown.
He called it a shakedown. Aren't we being shook down by these oil companies? These
Absolutely.
Companies, Shell and ExxonMobil and BP, they make hundreds of billions of dollars a year, poison the environment. We have to fight. We, and I mean we, have to fight wars to maintain control of the regions where oil is being pumped from. Come on. All right, let's take some calls. 313-298-WRIF. That's our phone and phone number. Here is Dennis in Monroe. Hi, Dennis. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I'm just calling in response to that Heidelberg project. She said they're going to use some mechanical equipment to dig the hole, and yeah. I was just wondering, for safety concern, if they called Miss Dig. well, I'm a heavy equipment operator by trade, so I've worked around utilities. You never know when you're going to find a gas line. Or
yeah, you're
I'm
right.
telling you what, these ladies, these women, these strong, amazing women in Code Pink really have their act together, and I trust that they do have that. But
you know what, Jalene, I'm gonna call Medea Benjamin and drop that on her, because you know they're from out of state, they might not know from any. No, that's an excellent suggestion. Hey, Medea, if you don't know what Miss Dig is, it sounds like sort of like a rock line or something, right? You know, like dig it. But no, that's a great suggestion, Dennis, and I will I'll call her in the morning and tell her. Call
All right, yeah, because usually it takes up to 3 days before they get everything marked. So.
Oh, well, I'd rather they didn't do it than, to be quite blunt, than have some accident. Yeah, well, that'd be great. Yeah, they hit a gas line, and level the Heidelberg project. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Here, oh, man, where is this? We don't have this little bumper anymore. Maybe we thought, all right, we'll just go with them. It's Todd from Southgate. Todd, we haven't heard from you in so long that we got rid of...
We really miss you.
We got rid of our George Carlin intro. Todd.
I mean, what other listener of this talk show has ever gotten their own intro? You're it.
Yeah.
I applaud you.
I feel very important.
Yeah, you should.
But, all right, a couple points here. I was just wondering if it's okay that you have your show here at night that uses gobs of fossil fuel driven energy to send out over the airwaves, but you know, somebody driving a Hummer, well then, you know, they're evil. Why is that?
I don't think they're evil at all.
How can you compare these? This is
well, for one thing, we're in a sense we all have we're all complicit in what is unraveling the fabric of the ecology of the world, but we're not offered a tremendous amount of choices. Like even if we decide to be a vegan and we walk and we bike and mm-hmm. what have you, still the system is set up for this ferocious consumption of energy. So, self-righteous, I don't know. But some things are symbolic. In a lot of ways, a lot of people won't wear Nikes because they're so obviously made in these sweatshops, or at least, you know, they were. On the other hand, well, you know, Adidas or whatever, probably made in the exact same conditions. Coca-Cola, well, you know, same deal.
What about how would you feel about celebrating the fact that those GM workers who have been laid off because they're not producing that Hummer anymore, what about those guys?
Well, I'll tell you, that's an excellent question, Todd, and that's what I call capitalist blackmail, because they always say, do you want to make this gas guzzler that is really emblematic of war, or do you want to get laid off? Do you want to keep on drilling oil out in deep well oil wells, or do you want to have laid off oil workers? So what we want to move to, would you agree? We want to move to a good choice as well as a bad choice, right?
Look, I'm all about moving away from fossil fuels, okay?
Okay.
But here's the thing. You can't just go ahead and say, let's do it all by wind and solar. Because I'll tell you what, it's the environmentalists in the first place that are protesting any wind farm that's ever introduced. So you guys kind of contradict yourself.
Well, that's not,
what
true.
What is that about?
Well, no, there are people. Actually, but mostly it's residents oftentimes.
Because they say they're noisy.
They're noisy, which I've been by.
I've heard they're not.
I don't know, but they say they're aesthetically not pleasing. Although I think they're
cool. Beautiful.
Yeah, I think they're mainly just rotating. And one thing, there's not environmentalists. I mean, there's all sorts of people. There's radical environmentalists. There's conservative environmentalists. So the people are all over the place. And what we have to create is some policy that makes sense in terms of the environment, which it sounds like you agree with. And what we don't want to do is let people's profit margin determine what gets produced and what doesn't. And President Obama is no different in that regard than President Bush.
Yep.
He had a lot of time to stop all of this and didn't. All right, Todd, thank you very much. We almost agree.
I know.
Wow.
Ooh, eerie.
It's getting scary. all right, let's see. Here is Jerry. Jerry's in Roseville. Go ahead, Jerry. You're on the air.
How you doing?
We're
good. People are missing the point on this thing. It has nothing to do with it has everything to do with the big corporations, but it's our government. It's the Republicans, the Democrats are all lining their pockets for their good, and they're not looking out for us.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a corporate system, even to the point now where the Supreme Court has held that corporations have the same right as you and I. So if there's a political candidate you'd like to contribute some money to, maybe you would send them $20 if you really were excited about it. Maybe you'd send them $50. In the meantime, now a corporation is going to be able to send them the opponent of your candidate is going to be able to send them $50,000. So people have used this phrase increasingly. It's a corporatist system.
Right, but the problem is that the people in office cannot look at a single problem and make a decision for the good of everybody and make things happen without adding all their bullshit to it.
Ooh, but I mean, I agree with your strong sentiment, but we can't say that.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I think what's happening is passions are beginning to run high. And what I was quoting from the chair of BP, where he refers to everyone else that isn't at the top of the pyramid where he and his rich pals are as the small people. And one of the things that typifies them, they are all powerful. And right now we are essentially powerless because, go ahead.
Well, the thing is we are powerful if we all act together.
Absolutely.
That's not necessarily going to happen because we can't all come together to do it.
We can't figure out right now how to do it. At different times in history, beginning with the origins of this country, beginning around, there was a big split, obviously, in 1860 and 61. That was a nasty way to settle things. But there's different periods in which the people, the ordinary people, intervened in history and made history, and it wasn't the elites. It wasn't the Atlas Shrugged folks who have routinely screwed everything up almost all throughout history. But no, I agree completely with that. All right. Thank you, Jerry. And one of the things that you can do, and I know this kind of activity is alien and even a little strange to people. I mean, you see demonstrators out on the street all the time. You see these enormous mass marches from the anti-war people and ecology, mm-hmm. and then you see these little small teabagger rallies and all that. But most of it, most people don't get out at all. They watch it on television and they'll say, I agree with that, or those people are crazy, or whatever.
Yeah.
But there is an exhilaration that is going to be present on Tuesday at the opening march and welcoming ceremony. That is going
noon,
to be
noon, right?
No, 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
Even better.
You won't have to get up early.
Even better.
Yeah, 3 o'clock on Tuesday, right near Wayne State University at the corner of Warren and Woodward, and people are going to assemble there for the opening of the United States Social Forum, and you can look that up. Again, it's not a dating thing or anything like that. Somebody, I keep saying it because someone said that to me one time. You know.
Yeah. Well, and as I always say, hey, you could find the love of your life there.
Yeah.
So it
people
could
have.
Yeah.
People have.
Love and
yeah.
politics, you know.
Let's see here. Here, just a couple articles, and we'll go back to the phones. As BP watches its bill rise quickly for the oil spill, including $20 billion it set aside for claims, it could find the tally growing much faster in coming months if the United States Department of Justice files criminal charges against the company. Based on latest estimates, for example, the daily civil fine for escaping oil alone could be $280 million. And let's see, according to one analyst, it could wind up to be $62.9 billion. Yeah, they write a check, right? They have it.
In fact, I heard something on the way here about $100 billion.
Well, it could be. Mm-hmm. President Obama said this company must not be allowed to go bankrupt. Which, again, it's too big to fail. Have we heard that before?
Yeah, this sounds awfully familiar.
Yeah. But that's the capitalist blackmail, that we all of a sudden we're going to wind up bailing out BP because if it collapsed, the what do they call that? You know, like a snowball rolling downhill.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could do a lot of damage to the so-called recovery. Who's recovering? The big companies. BP is the largest supplier of fuel to the U.S. military. That's one of the things going on. Russell McIver, who I've interviewed before, who puts out something called Corporate Crime Reporter. And I think it's about $200 a year to subscribe, but you can go to corporatecrimereporter.com. He says BP is a recidivist corporate criminal. You know, repeat, corporate criminal. BP has 3 convictions and 1 deferred prosecution agreement in the last 10 years. In his speech on Tuesday night, Obama did not once mention the words crime, criminal, or justice. He asked, why not? Because Obama is not serious about corporate crime. If he were, he would bring the full law enforcement force of his administration down on BP and the responsible executives. McIver says BP would be debarred from all government contracts, including contracts supplying the U.S. military in Iraq with a majority of its fuel needs. Time for a change. Yeah, where have we heard that before?
Yeah.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
You're not just a good shopper. You are in total financial command. That's why you wait patiently for the perfect price-plunging deal. And now, it's here. Hurry into any Verizon store through June 27th. Switch your number, and you'll receive a $100 bill credit. That's right. Switch now, get $100 back. Plus, get the LG Cosmos, a socially skilled text machine with a full QWERTY keyboard for just $19.99 after $50 mail-in rebate debit card. So don't miss it. Come in through June 27th, switch your number to Verizon, and get an automatic $100 bill credit, all on America's largest and most reliable wireless network. When you want your network to work, you want Verizon. Visit in Verizon Wireless, verizonwireless.com, or call 1-800 to join in. Bill credit requires new 2-year activation per line on single calling plans of 900 plus anytime minutes or family share plan calling plans of 1400 plus anytime minutes. Activation, early termination, and other fees apply. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you don't have coverage, listen to this. AccuQuote can help save you up to 70% on a term life policy that's right for you. Pick up the phone and call AccuQuote at 800-654-2075. AccuQuote has helped hundreds of thousands of people save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how. AccuQuote monitors hundreds of top-rated life insurance products so you can get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. Rates for women are even lower. A short 5-minute call is all it takes. Call AccuQuote for a free life insurance quote at 800-654-2075. Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Find out how much you can save on life insurance. Call AccuQuote for your free quote. 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
What's up, everybody? This is Sully from Godsmack.
Hello, Motor City. This is Mike McCready from Pearl Jam.
Hello, Motor City. This is Kenny Page from Led Zeppelin. Your radio's locked on 101 WRIF. If it rocks, it's on the roof.
Everything that rocks. STV. They're coming. August 26th to the Fox Theater, and The Riff has your tickets. Listen all day this Monday as 101 WRIF will be blowing out your free tickets to STP every hour, starting at 11 a.m. with Ann Carlini. STP Monday. Listen and win.
Hi, this is Scott Weiland from STP, and you're rocking with 101 WRIF, The Riff.
Everything rocks.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. And we have some emails that have come into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. These are great. Short ones the way they should be. You have one?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're talking about our friend from Code Pink burying the Hummer tomorrow at the Heidelberg Project.
Right.
And someone called in and said, make sure they call Ms. Digg.
Ms. Digg, you got to make sure you're not hitting any gas lines. Yeah.
And this was sent in as saying, make sure the equipment operator carries a union card. You guys are thorough out there.
Yeah. Medea, are you listening?
Yeah.
Make sure. And we're also naturally talking about BP and their assassination of the planet. And Tony, why can't I think of his last name?
Is it Hayward?
Tony Hayward, the CEO, says, Tony, this is from Steve, Tony is so concerned about the Gulf that he spent today crewing on his personal 52-foot sailing yacht in a race.
Yeah,
he's really worried, isn't he? Well, we've been quoting all night the words of the BP chair, different than the CEO, of course. Congress who said he cares about the small people.
Mm-hmm.
And the small people are getting together, and it's really infuriating all the right-wing whack jobs like this dickhead
Nolan Finley
on the Detroit News. No wonder this paper is going under.
Well, this is really bad. You know, yeah. I don't read the news, really. I read the free press if I read mm-hmm. local news, and I don't read the news. But this is the first time I've ever read an article by this
No, he's out of
person.
Control. Yeah. He says, now, the U.S. Social Forum is coming to Detroit on
Tuesday.
It's already here. Including tomorrow with Code Pink bearing a Hummer at the Heidelberg Project. And if you're saying, what is this guy talking about? If you just tuned in and someone says they're burying a Hummer at the Heidelberg
they
Project.
They are.
The Heidelberg Project is an art installation made up of the junk of this society. It covers blocks. It is staggering. When anyone ever comes to Detroit, no one has ever come to Detroit to visit us that I haven't taken there. It's absolutely amazing. And so you can just, you can Google Heidelberg Project, and like the German city. But Nolan Finley says this U.S. Social Forum is a hootenanny. This guy, what century is this guy in? People are going, I mean, if you're under 35, you're saying a hootenanny. What is a hootenanny?
Is he he's meaning it in a negative way, which yeah. doesn't really
Well, that's
work.
Interesting. A hootenanny was a folk session. Where people would get together, and they called it sometimes a hoot, even.
Yeah.
What a hoot. That could have been where it came from. But the hootenanny was also was associated with folk music, and folk music was associated with the left and communists in the 30s, the mm-hmm. 40s, and 50s. So that at one point they were going to have, I can't remember exactly this history, but they wouldn't allow them to have the television station that had this folk show wouldn't allow hootenanny to on the air to be called that because it was commie, right? So this is where Nolan is coming from. So he said the U.S. Social Forum, which begins in Detroit on June 22nd, is a hootenanny of pinkos, environuts, peaceniks, Luddites. Luddites are machine breakers from the 18th century, old hippies, Robin Hoods, and urban hunters and gatherers. Then he says their mission. Now, what is wrong with this? Their mission is to tear down Wall Street and use the bricks to pave a main street. I like that.
Yeah, where everyone lives in racial and social harmony. And he's saying this is bad?
I don't get it. Nobody has too little or too much. And food, shelter, transportation, education, and clothing, and cell phones are inalienable rights. I don't get the cell phones.
Yeah, but he's really reaching
on
that
one. That could be a slogan. Tear down Wall Street and use the bricks to pave Main Street. Anybody object to that slogan? I mean, conservative or liberal or radical or anything like that?
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote to Nolan, and I said I want to thank him very much.
Oh, I didn't know this.
For publishing this, because as P.T. Barnum said, any publicity is good publicity, and even though hardly anybody reads the Detroit News anymore, which is one of the reasons they're going out of business and only publish, what, three times a week now or something like that, is because of fossils like this character, that he probably has informed more people about the existence of the U.S. Social
Forum. That's so true.
Yeah. So the U.S. Social Forum, by the way, we haven't even told you the extent of it. It has 1,200 workshops on everything under the sun. Any issue that you may care about is probably redundantly repeated. I know a professor from Wayne State University who is giving a workshop on the Afghan and Iraq wars and the cost of it and what it does to cities like Detroit and how much of our money goes to the war machine mm-hmm. and how little to what we need. Here in Detroit, they're cutting back on EMS.
Right, emergency yeah. services.
Right? Yeah, right. So that, I forgot the exact figure. Actually, I thought I had it here somewhere. That they are going to cut great numbers of...
That's not good.
Yeah, that's not good. So, it's that kind of thing that... So, at the same time, the guy is going to be talking about the wars. There's 15 other simultaneous workshops on the same subject going on.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that
There's
shows
also
how enormous
an incredible
this is.
Amount of music, huge parties at night called, I think, the Leftist Lounge is one of them, going to be in the Eastern Market District.
Sounds like a perfect place for us.
With DJs, you know, and our friend David Rovix is going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, so
singer-songwriter.
Yeah. So you can go either to US. ssf2010.org, or go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Jillian and I will be all over this thing, and if you want an experience that you may remember for the rest of your life, come on down. The big opening march and opening ceremony is this Tuesday, 3 p.m. at Warren and Woodward, right by Wayne State University.
Looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it. Let's see. Here, actually, Kevin is calling from Detroit and wants to talk about the meeting that we are attending. Go ahead. What are you? What meeting is that, Kevin?
The one Tuesday that Nolan family basically called, I guess, people of our ilk a bunch of lunatics and crazies. But why doesn't he say the same thing about the Tea Party, Pete? I just want to ask you a question. There's some whack jobs in that organization, isn't it? Rand Paul, for one.
Well, they're all
whack. They're very whacked.
As far as I'm concerned, they're all whack jobs.
That lady in Nevada, the senator down there.
Yeah, what did she say? If we can't vote the senator from Nevada, Harry Reid, out, we'll have to take him out in the Second Amendment manner.
Yeah,
now, what is this, man? They're threatening the United States Senator. Here's a candidate for the United States Senate, a teabagger, who's threatening a senator, a sitting senator, with death, an assassination threat. Why don't they arrest her?
I agree with you. I've been listening to you for about 25 years, and I don't see you. You seem like a pretty reasonable guy. Me and Jolene seem the same as on her end. I mean, why is he saying all these things? I was going to take my 11-year-old son down there.
I don't know. Are you going to come down?
Yeah, come down.
All right. Well, I don't know.
That'd be great.
How should look at our website. Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, and there's a photograph of me and Jolene.
No, I'm at the Heidel, because I don't stay that far from the Heidel project. Are they going to bury a Hummer down there?
They're going to bury a Hummer.
Starting in the morning, and then they're going. The celebration part of it starts around 4 o'clock, I believe. Yeah.
And but they're going to be burying the Hummer at the Heidelberg Project.
And painting it pink.
And painting it pink.
And planting flowers inside of it.
All right, Kevin, you look for us. Jolene and I have a big smile on our face.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. All right. There's the small people. That's 99.9% of the world, actually.
Yes.
And then there are the big people, the people that have screwed everybody up, the Atlas Shrugged people. This is, they don't even have to shrug. Remember, you know, the theme of that stupid book is that the creative geniuses of the world, that Ayn Rand, what was her real name?
I don't know.
Something Rosenbaum.
Oh.
Yeah. She came from Russia. And, well, she was born in a communist country, so she was understandably fearful of governments, totalitarian governments like that. But she got it kind of wrong. Wait a minute. Here, I gotta see about this before I was going to go on with something. But here's Susie from Dearborn Heights, and she says the song. Oh yeah, I was wondering about the song by Jefferson Airplane, where Grace Slick says, "Everything you say, we are, we are." Susie, you're on the air. What song is that?
Hi, that was I think it's called "Start a Revolution," and it starts out, "We are forces of chaos and anarchy. Everything they say, we are, and we are very proud of ourselves."
That's right. Yeah. Well, we are not forces of chaos and anarchy, that's for sure.
Well, that's the song. And,
yeah.
And of course, that's got the famous "Up Against the Wall."
Oh, yeah, don't say that. Right. Yeah. But wait a minute, Susie. That's not the name of the song. That's a line in there. "Start a Revolution."
"Start a Revolution," I believe, is the name of the song.
No, I'm absolutely sure it's not. But you're on the track, and someone is going to call us at 313-298.
Well, maybe it's Volunteers.
Volunteers of America, yeah.
Is that it?
Or is that the group that comes and gets my old clothing?
I couldn't figure out which one, but I Volunteers just didn't sound right to me.
No, it is Volunteers.
Well, anyway, that's it.
Susie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. 313-298-WRIF. All right. So who's taking care of the small people? I think in good times, a lot of people say, "I can take care of myself. I don't need anybody else. I'm working three jobs." Why in the world anybody should have to work three jobs to take care of themselves and their family? Is so far beyond me, in fact, it's almost criminal. I mean, we're back to the 19th century. All of it's going back that way. Well, there is one organized force in the United States that does support the small people. The small people, I have to keep saying that. That's what the BP chair called all of us. He cares about the small people. And that's the union movement. With all its flaws, with all of its problems, some of them have been very corrupt. Some of them have been very bureaucratic. There's probably some of them that still are corrupt and bureaucratic, to be sure. But I think the UAW, with the election of Bob King as the UAW president to taking over from retiring President Ron Gettelfinger, who fired Jalene and I.
He did.
He did. We worked. We did a talk show for the UAW, a national talk show for about 3 years.
But he didn't just fire us. He fired the whole network.
Yeah. He fired. Well, it wasn't such a bad idea, to tell you the truth. Well, no, because we were premature Bush haters.
We were.
Yeah. So every time we'd say Bush lied, which people routinely say now.
And war criminal.
And war criminal, all that.
Oh, boy, they really went crazy over that one.
And since Bush had stolen the 2000 election, this is when we had the show, we referred to him always as the loser, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And or sometimes rather than the president, we called him the resident.
We had many names.
So we started off with...
Those weren't too mean.
No.
Just think about how mean these teabaggers are. We weren't even that mean.
Well, we started off with 14 stations, and we were down to two, and Mike Malloy was down to one. He was also a talk show host.
And he still is.
Yeah, he still is.
Oh,
one of my faves.
Oh, the memories.
And, yeah. And we were... I was always curious what would happen if Mike had no stations.
Yeah, right.
But we kept... what did we get?
He's talking to himself.
Santa Fe,
New Mexico, loved us.
Yeah, we did.
And we loved them.
We loved them. Right? Yeah. Anyway, so Bob King has taken over, and he said he's going to begin an aggressive agenda to organize workers across all the different industries and return the union to its social justice roots, which is extraordinarily
I thought that was pretty rad.
Yeah. He said in automotive, for example, he's going to fight for the right to organize plants operated by Toyota, Honda, Nissan, and Hyundai. But what is really important? And here's what I was talking about. You think, oh, the unions, yeah, they were cool for my father or my grandfather, but...
this is the age-old argument.
Yeah, the age-old argument or what have you. But he called for the UAW to return to the social justice and civil rights mission championed by famed UAW leader Walter Reuther. And King himself was arrested several times for civil disobedience during the Great Detroit newspaper strike that went on from 1995 to 2000. But here's what I thought was so important, and here's where I think the nub of all this lies. Bob King, the new president of the UAW, said, "Sisters and brothers," you like the way he formulates that, right?
Yep.
"Sisters and brothers, are we ready to take on the fight for social and economic justice for all workers?" Now that's the key. For all workers. He said to the UAW, he didn't say, hey, we're these high-paid elite workers, whereas you know, there's less and less unionized workers and wages are going down and jobs are going overseas still. Who just did that? Was it Whirlpool?
Yeah, there's the Maytag.
Tell us who we're bad-mouthing.
Right.
He says, are we ready to take on the fight for social and economic justice for all workers? And you say, well, I'm not a worker. I'm an account executive, or I'm, you know.
You're still working for the man, man.
Yeah. So the deal is that we're talking about a campaign, an agenda that supports the rights of probably 80%, 85% of the country. And it doesn't mean anything's going to happen. He's not talking about confiscating the wealth of, some of them should, like BP and the banksters that have robbed us blind, but rather to bring back a sense of social security, if you will. I mean, you think about that phrase. We usually think of that's what the old folks get every month, right? What that really meant is a precise phrase. Have social security, because what we have now is great social insecurity, right? All right, we got to take a break, but let me get this one call in. You call in the meantime, 313-298-WRIF. Here's Jamie in Goodrich. Hey, Jamie, you're on the air. You got the song?
Hey, Peter, it's War Pigs. Is the song.
No,
that's Black Sabbath.
That's Austin Chess. Wait till your judgment day comes. Ozzy said it best.
Well, Ozzy did.
Ozzy said it well, yes.
And War Pigs is a great song, but it's not the one in which they said, whatever you say we are, we are. All right, thank you, Jamie.
Peter, during the break, I'm going to get to the bottom of this as your producer.
No. I want, oh, here it is.
Okay.
Somebody, we can be together, Jefferson Airplane.
Okay.
But not volunteers, huh? All right, come on, classic rockers. I mean, you know.
Shame on us.
CSX plays modern rock, right? And also classic rock.
CSX?
What is that? Oh, that's a railroad company.
Yeah,
right?
That's a railroad company.
Yeah, yeah.
Riff. Yeah, it's an active rock station. Yeah, those old railroad people, yeah. They're just squeaking the wheels.
Break time.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing. And we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Line scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove line scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
These days, people of all ages, including adults, can have a perfect smile. Thanks to today's technology, people with crooked teeth may no longer need to wear metal braces. One option many adults prefer is invisible braces. Instead of the typical metal bands or brackets that are cemented to teeth, these braces are clear plastic trays. Some advantages of invisible braces are they can be removed for eating and for brushing and flossing. They are practically invisible to see, and they are less irritating to gums than traditional braces. Keep in mind that invisible braces are only available for people who need minor corrective work. If you are considering braces and would like to learn more about invisible braces, speak with your dentist. You're never too old for a beautiful smile. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez Howell. For more information, visit our website at ada.org.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
101. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
You cannot petition the Lord with prayer!
So says Jim Morrison of The Doors, speaking about classic rock. Have we gotten to the bottom of this deal with this song? I mean, shouldn't that be easy? I mean, come on.
I thought you said it was solved. I would have spent that whole break researching.
We can be together. I mean, I could hear the song in my mind. An artist who designed an Ohio church's giant statue of Jesus that was destroyed by lightning this week says he's willing to help replace it. Brad Coriel of Nashville says he's not been in contact with the Solid Rock Church, but would be honored to be involved. And the church is along an interstate north of Cincinnati, and
it's this giant.
Six story high.
Jesus.
But they call him Touchdown Jesus.
Sorry.
A lightning strike Monday sparked a fire that burned down the plastic foam and fiberglass statue that was nicknamed Touchdown Jesus because of the way the arms were raised. You know, like when there's a touchdown or a field goal.
Who does this in the first place?
Yeah, it's just, but here, there was an adult bookstore across the street. Nothing happened to them. What's the message here?
Let's try to decipher that.
Four missionaries arrested at Dearborn Arab Festival. This is four Christian missionaries trying to convert Muslims were arrested and jailed Friday for disorderly conduct at the Arab Festival in Dearborn. Dearborn Police Chief Ron Headed said that we did make four arrests for disorderly conduct. They did cause a stir.
Oh, I'm sure they did. Yeah, you know, we even know someone that goes off and does these things.
I hope it was her.
I don't think it was.
The four who were said to be at the Dearborn Arab International Festival. It's a good festival. I didn't know it was even on. With a Christian group called Acts 17 Apologetics. Well, at least they're apologetic.
Oh, my.
Were later released on bail. The Free Press reported last year on the growing number of evangelical Christians targeting Dearborn to convert Muslims. I mean, can you imagine Muslims coming out and trying to convert Christians?
Yeah. No, I mean, not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really disturbing stuff there. Hey, Peter, Winston Smith wrote in, and he has a message for both of us. And
What's that? He says,
he's so messed up right now.
Yeah.
He's hammered, okay?
Yeah.
He can hardly move. Please slow down so he can keep up. So we will talk like this Winston.
One more religious note. Tens of thousands of black-clad ultra-Orthodox Jews staged mass demonstrations on Thursday to protest a Supreme Court ruling forcing the integration of a religious girls' school. Now, I thought
this is in Jerusalem.
But... Yeah, this is in Jerusalem. I thought they didn't want, like, boys and girls going to school. But
that's what I thought, too.
This is horrible.
This is.
Protesters, they said about 100,000 people converged in downtown Jerusalem in snarled traffic and another large religious enclave. They've crowded onto balconies and city squares and waved posters decrying the court's decision and proclaiming the supremacy of religious law. So it's Torah, not Sharia like the Muslims have, but Torah law, that rather than secular law of Israel. There were small scuffles, blah, 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 blah. One of the largest protests in Jerusalem's history. Here's what was going on. By the way, they say the throngs of devout Jews showed to which extent the ultra-Orthodox live by their own rules, some of them archaic, while wielding disproportionate power in the modern state of Israel. This sounds exactly like the teabaggers.
Yeah.
Because guess what percentage of the Israeli population are these ultra-Orthodox? 650,000, just under 10% of the nation's population. Well, the only thing is, though, when the tea baggers get out, they only get a few hundred. Or they have these nationwide demonstrations. They have like 1,000 or something like that. As I always say, there are as many people lined up at the Port-a-Johns for like anti-war demonstrations and pro-choice demonstrations than these teabaggers have in their whole demonstration.
True, it's true.
Anyway, here's what was going on. Parents of European or Ashkenazi dissent at a girls' school in the West Bank settlement of Emmanuel don't want their daughters to study with schoolgirls of Mideast and North African descent known as Sephardim, I'm sure it is. The Ashkenazi parents insist they aren't racist just because they're all from Europe and these people are from North Africa and the Middle East and are a lot darker. They say they're not racist, but want to keep the classroom segregated, arguing that the families of the Sephardi girls aren't religious enough. The Israel Supreme Court rejected that argument, ruled that 43 sets of parents who have defied the integration efforts by keeping their daughters from school were to be jailed on Thursday for 2 weeks. I guess they got sent out. So
horrible.
There you go. Esther Bark, 50, who has seven daughters, said the issue of keeping the girls away from the temptations of the modern world was a good thing. She says to suddenly put them in an open-minded place is not good for them.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, good old religion.
Good old religion.
You can always rely on it for this kind of lunacy.
Before the break, we were talking about a number of things. The United States Social Forum, this enormous gathering of the left in this country that, of course, is not getting the kind of publicity and attention that the small right wing of the teabaggers is getting. They get 700 people in Nashville, and they've got 1,000 media people registered. We are going to have 20,000 people here. You know, and if everybody had access, like all these teabaggers are, you know, upscale and what have you.
Yeah.
If everybody...
Well, 'cause they have to pay $1,000 to go to these events.
Yeah. There's a lot of people.
Not this one.
There's a lot of people that wanted to come to the United States Social Forum. This is going to be starting on June 22nd to the 26th. They can't afford to come.
Right.
And there's a few scholarships, but they just, I mean, they're probably, if everybody could come, there'd probably be 50,000 people.
And that that crazy guy from the Detroit News, Nolan
Finley,
he was complaining about, there's a whole tent city that's going up because people are coming in and they're camping.
Yeah.
It's okay. They're allowed, right?
They can't go to the Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah, they can't afford, or maybe they can't even afford the Motorama down here on 8 Mile, right?
Right.
So he's complaining about how, you know, all these...
I mean, sleeping. If you have to walk over, they're sleeping.
Yeah.
All right, here, though, is... we were talking earlier as well about who is going to speak for what the chair of BP calls the small people. That's, you know, 90% of us here in this country. And I said one of the people who apparently is going to do that is the new UAW president, Bob King, who's a wonderful man, actually. He takes, never mind.
He was a fan of our show.
He was.
He probably still is.
He is, but I was going to do too many asides.
Okay. So
he ended his speech with a question that drew cheers and a standing ovation. He said, "Sisters and brothers, are we ready to take on the fight for social and economic justice for all workers?" Which means most of us. On the other side of the aisle, the Republicans, the right, the teabaggers, they're just thinking, oh, we're going to get rid of those Democrats because they've screwed up so badly. And they haven't, you know, they have. But Representative Daryl Issa, who is from California, he's a conservative firebrand here, whose specialty is lobbying corruption allegations at the Obama White House and is making plans to hire dozens of subpoena-wielding investigators if Republicans win the House this fall. He will become the chair of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee in 2011, I mean, 2011. That's wrong. It would be 2013. He has told Republican leadership that if he becomes chair, he wants to roughly double his staff. So this would all be after President Obama. But here's what he said. Here's what he said. "That will make all the difference in the world," he told 400 applauding party members during a dinner at the chocolate-themed Hershey Lodge. Here's what he wants to do. "I won't use it to have corporate America live in fear that we are going to subpoena everything. I will use it to get every information that today the White House is not producing." So what he's saying is, and this is the right wing, this is the Republican Party, which is all right wing now, there are no moderates, that he says that if he gets in, if the Republicans get back in, and they're drooling to get back to the levers of power, to get their buddies in the corporations be able to do what they want without even the slightest little impediment. I mean, the Obama administration is giving them the slightest impediment. He's making sure that that corporate America won't live in fear. All right, 313-298-WRIF. Here's someone who says that they may be living in a constant state of deja vu. It's Darius from Centerline. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, when I went into the hospital 6 months ago, and they put me in that drug-induced coma against my will without even seeing if it was all right. Ever since then, everything that's happening seems like I've done it before at least a couple of times, been rehearsed, but it's just constantly deja vu.
Well, it's deja vu all over again, and I must really be disconcerting.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
All right, Darius, thank you so much. Sorry to hear that. I don't think we can spend a lot of time on personal problems. Here's Mo. Mo, where are you calling from? You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How's it going?
Where are you calling from?
Dearborn Heights.
Oh, good. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah. Well, first, I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
Thank you. As for the song that those lines are from, I don't know about We Can Be Together, but I do know the words also appear in We Built This City.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. But that's the Jefferson Starship.
Right.
Oh, now this is getting even more confusing.
Yeah.
Well, I only know that because I actually heard the song about an hour ago. So,
okay.
Someone was actually blaring it out their car window when I was walking down Michigan Ave.
I got to say, Mo, that is not in We Built This City.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, well.
Peter, you keep arguing.
We cannot argue about facts, that's for sure.
Yeah, but I don't know if anyone knows the facts here right now.
This whole thing with BP and the press, okay, this idiot in the press sits there and calls us Robin Hoods.
Yeah.
Well, I have to take that as a compliment because, well, I mean, to be honest, we need a Robin Hood right about now.
Sure, sure.
Absolutely.
Well, wait a minute. All the King Johns, this is the Atlas Shrugged crew, they have stolen from the poor, the working class and the middle class to enrich themselves. A little bit, it's time to do a little bit of a reversal of that, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, also, going back to when you stated that you thought a little jail time might actually deter stuff like this from happening.
Yeah.
But the simple fact is, I mean, guys like this BP guy, now, they're used to the money and power that they get, that they have.
Sure.
So I'm thinking, yeah, you give them a little jail time, they're just going to go right back to doing what they were doing anyways because that's all they know.
Yeah, what's that about the leopard changing the spots?
Yeah,
it doesn't happen much.
I've lived all over the place in Michigan, and I've actually known some higher-ups. I've actually met Dick DeVos in person.
Really?
Oh, wow.
So, I mean...
How was that?
It was actually kind of fun. I got to meet him because my English teacher's wife was his personal secretary.
No. You know what happened? Well, when he was running for governor against Jennifer Granholm, Drew and Mike, our morning show here, said some derogatory things about, what's his company?
Amway.
Well,
which they've changed the name now.
Yeah, and suddenly here comes DeVos in this convoy of like Lincoln Navigators, you know, and then demanded to be on the show. I mean, they were okay with it, but yeah,
I'm sure they loved it.
Yeah.
But people that have money and power, I mean, seriously, they kind of be stubborn. I mean, I know DeVos is a stubborn man.
Sure. Well, they're all that. You know, that's it. It goes with the territory. They think they're better than the small people. That's, you know, what the BP chair called everybody else. They have this extraordinary arrogance.
All
the while, they're screwing everything up. They've screwed up the economy. They've screwed up the political system. They've screwed up their own businesses. I mean, a lot of them got bailed out, but not all of them, you know? I mean, just think about, what was Madoff's first name?
Bernie.
Bernie Madoff. I mean, and all the people that invested money, they all thought they were smart.
They had something on one of those morning shows this morning. It's showing one of his big offices in New York City.
Good.
it was kind of joyous.
Mo. Thank you, Mo. I can't believe that we are not getting the definitive answer on this. Could you, Google lyrics. Just put Volunteers lyrics.
Okay.
And then We Can Be Together lyrics. All right? And then We Built This City by Jefferson Starship.
Oh, jeez.
Mo, I'm sorry. It does not have that in there. All right. Here is Rusty in Fowlerville. Hey, Rusty. It's Peter and Jalene. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good.
Hey, I got a couple things. One of them is that leftist lounge you're talking about.
Yeah.
My kids are kind of, they're musicians and they're kind of like, they're tired of what's going on, and they're free thinking.
Good.
But one of them got in a little trouble, and he's on probation.
Uh-oh.
And it's like, He was totally overcharged, too. It was one of them deals where, like, we'll charge you with 20 things. And
yep, they do
that. If you plead to two of them, then, you know, you won't have to spend $2,000 on a lawyer and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like they usually do.
Okay.
But I was just wondering, I'm worried about sending him to something like that because I don't want him to end up getting in trouble.
Well, that's a good question.
Here's what you do.
Joe sent in an email and said, should I bring my own tear gas mask? No, you shouldn't, because nothing's going to happen. This is a peaceful, legal march. People are interested in figuring out what's going on in our town.
I think our town's a whole lot cooler than, for example, Washington, D.C., when you march on the mall. They go a little bit crazy.
Yeah. So this is going to be a peaceful, legal march, and that's going to be on Tuesday at 3 o'clock, and it's by Wayne State University, Warren and Woodward. And people are going to march down there to Cobo Hall, where all the events are. You know, so this is it. This is a big deal. 20,000 people are going
to
be there.
Oh, we're marching all the way to Cobo?
Yeah. It's about 2 miles. Come on. And a lot of the events are going to take place in Hart Plaza. Get this. I want to just tell you this, and I'll get back to your concerns, because I think they're important ones, Rusty, is that the U.S. Social Forum had a lease for Cobo Hall and Hart Plaza from Monday, tomorrow, or today, I guess it is already, today through Saturday or Sunday. Well, what's happening in Hart Plaza tonight? The fireworks.
Oh, tonight, Monday night.
Yeah,
yes.
But they had already leased it to the U.S.
But they
Social
didn't
Forum.
Win.
No, so they actually had to, so now the city is renting it from the Social Forum.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, but this is going to be something that everybody can go to, Rusty. And if there is concerns about that, there are things that are happening, like I say, all during the day in Hart Plaza, things that are happening in Cobo Hall. There is, for a lot of this, to come to all the workshops, there is a fee, and they have considerations for people that they can't afford it and what have you. But for one thing, you could probably spend all the time outside and never have to pay a dime. So I
come on down.
Yeah,
about showing solidarity, basically.
Sure,
right on.
That is the word.
Like I said, I'm union. I've been union. My dad was union. My grandpa was union. Everybody's union, and that's what I preach. And
wow.
My son digs that. But, you know, it's just so hard on kids nowadays. That's something that should be actually, approached, is just how bad kids got it nowadays.
Well, that's there are a lot of youth workshops. And like I said, there is all these music venues as well that are happening all during the days and also during a lot of the nights. And if you tell him to just Google United States Social Forum, the whole schedule is there. When I look at the schedule, it makes my head swim.
Yeah, for sure.
There is like, I think there's like way too much going on.
But we'll take it. We'll take it.
Out, eh?
Yeah. All right, Rusty, we'll look for your son. We'll look for you downtown at the U.S. Social Forum.
Peter, I have news for you. Now, you're looking for, what are the exact lyrics?
Yeah.
What you say we are?
Yeah.
It's not in volunteers.
Okay.
Now, where would you like me to go next?
Okay. We can be together.
Okay.
We can be together.
I'm on it.
And then we built this city.
Oh.
As the airplane enters the space age and becomes the starship. Oh, I want to get this on. This is an important subject. This is Tim from Lincoln Park. Tim, we haven't heard from you in a long time. Welcome.
Yeah, how are you guys doing?
We're doing good.
There's going to be a big whaling conference of all these countries, United States, Iceland, Japan,
right.
Australia, Norway, and the upside of the conference is that it's supposed to try to limit whaling. Now, if anybody doesn't know out there, a lot of countries still engage in the murdering of whales.
Like
not a
two
lot.
Or three.
Well, three. Norway and Iceland
and Japan.
Japan being the worst
perpetrator. Yeah.
Well, I consider whales basically as living beings. So for me, I mean, even killing one whale, I consider it an act of murder. But what I found surprising about the report I heard on BBC was that groups like the World Wide Wildlife Fund and Greenpeace have agreed now to a cutting down of whaling, but not a zero tolerance for all whaling. And the lady that went on BBC was saying, well, it's better to effectively agree on kind of a cutting down of the killing of whales, because then the killing could be monitored. And it was sort of surprising, because a lot of these groups in the past, I thought, had called for completely a zero tolerance on a whale.
Well, particularly the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society that's out there actually stopping, out there in their ships, that interfering with Japanese whaling. In fact, if you watch Whale Wars on the Animal Planet, it's absolutely incredible. The Japanese ships sunk a Sea Shepherd boat this last season, yeah. And they are now in the Mediterranean, and they just had another confrontation. An Italian tuna fisherman's boat rammed the Steve Irwin, one of the Sea Shepherd ship, but they were able to release up to 800 tuna that were being illegally caught. And the problem with this all is that it's all being overfished. You know, some people might be saying, listening to you, Tim, and say, yeah, who cares about whales? Who cares about fish? I don't know. If they say that, I don't even know where to go from it. But we're in danger of eliminating entire species of fish, including tuna. They're getting smaller and smaller. They're taking them younger and younger. They're not reproducing. And this is like the oil drillers. I mean, these people that are overfishing are exactly with the same mentality of getting what they can as much as they can, as soon as they can, and the future be damned. But here's what's going on. Right now, Japan and Norway and Iceland illegally whale. They got cockamamie excuses. Japan says they're doing it for research. The idea with this compromise is that they would be restricted to a certain kill level. But I agree with you, and the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society agrees with you, that they got to have zero, that these are outlaw countries violating international law and international agreements, and they just have to be stopped. And the problem is that, the Obama administration is going along with this.
Well, it's amazing, when this guy was elected, and I wasn't a big fan of his to begin with. No. There was all this talk about there was going to be such incredible change, and we just started to have more of the same corporate crap. And, we have an incredibly unsustainable planet now. I mean, this oil disaster may be an extinction-level event down in the Gulf of Mexico, and most people seem to be behaving like nothing's going on.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, Tim, I was speaking somewhere. I was speaking about the environment. And they said, look, we've got about 50 people in this room, and people aren't paying attention to this, as you said. And they said to me, what do I think it's going to take? I said, what do I think it's going to take? A catastrophe. And this, in fact, it's unfortunate that what's happening. It might be the wake-up call. All right, Tim, thank you very much. Thanks for having joined us.
I have your answer.
What?
And you were right. It is, we can be together.
I'm not right. Somebody called in and said that.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah. I'm so confused by this point. Yeah. Everything they say we are, and we are very proud of ourselves.
Yeah, that's right. It's a funny song. But, and they sing, we can be together. What are some of the lyrics? You got the lyrics right
there? Well, some of them I can't read.
Oh, yeah, they have.
Up against the wall. Mm-mm.
MF?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, all your private property is target for your enemy, and your enemy is we.
Yeah, right. Well, in a few hours, in about 10 hours, the group Code Pink, you can go to codepinkalert.org, is going to be assembling at Detroit's Heidelberg Project. That's at the corner of Heidelberg and Mount Elliott on Detroit's east side, kind of around Mac and Mount Elliott. Very cool place to go. Some of you suburbanites go, I'm not going there. It's a very cool place. The Heidelberg Project is so cool anyway. And Code Pink is going to be burying a Hummer in a joyful ceremony, they say, and decorating it. And it's it's 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And then 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., they're going to be holding a ceremonial memorial. In the meantime, this is all about the United States Social Forum, and Nolan Finley, a man from the 1950s, says the forum is a hootenanny of pinkos, enviro-nuts. That means people that don't want to kill all the whales, or don't want to cut down all the trees, or
care about the future of the planet.
Yeah, did you see, there was something, maybe it was in his stupid paper even, that the front page was life in the most polluted zip code in Detroit.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So the Environuts, which Environuts, I guess it is. He's making up this word. The Environuts are people like Jalene and me, and hopefully a lot of you, that say, you know what? We shouldn't let corporations poison people because the technology exists to have zero discharge into our air, into our ground, and into our water. So these people are poisoning us because they don't want to spend the money in order to stop this. Because their bottom line, the fact that they're going to send out more money to the rich people that own the company rather than guarantee us health, and of course it's always the poor people that suffer the worst. The world's largest incinerator is sited in an east side area of Detroit that's been there for years and years now.
Oh my gosh.
And there's going to be a big demonstration as part of the United States Social Forum on Saturday against this monster. And it was said at the time, there's no way to get rid of the toxic waste that it ultimately produces. It's going to be an economic disaster for the city of Detroit. And it's going to be an environmental hazard for everybody that's going to be breathing what's in it. Well, guess what? All the critics were 100% right. In fact, dear friends, all the critics on the left, when they talk about wars, when they talk about environment, when they talk about politics or politicians, they're always right. They're always right. And who is defending what is? Who is conserving the reality as we find it today? What would you call somebody that wants to conserve the absolute worst aspects of a system, no matter how many people are getting poisoned or ripped off or hurt or whatever? Mm-hmm. What would be a good name to call someone who wants to conserve that? How about a conservative?
Conservative.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Right. Maybe here's somebody that disagrees with it. Here's Barry in Mount Clemens. Barry, hi. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I was listening to you guys earlier, and it seems like you're a little bit down on the Tea Party.
Wait. A little bit down?
Yeah.
100% down.
What I don't understand, I mean, the Tea Party movement, initially it was started as, like, you know, a protest against taxes. You know, you had conservatives, you had Democrats who were both getting booed off the stage at demonstrations.
Wait. They've done studies on this. It's about 85% of right-wing Republicans. Taxes in Michigan on individuals have gone down. U.S. taxes have gone down. What don't these people want to pay? Why wouldn't these people, particularly since the majority of teabaggers are upscale people, why in the hell aren't they willing to pay their fair share of taxes?
I think basically, you know, I don't know if you maybe not understand it and all that. I think basically the heart of the Tea Party movement is more against the federal income tax and the Federal Reserve than it is just paying taxes.
Well, but it's grown into so many, it's morphed into so many other things at this point
. I mean, this huge amount of money goes for the war budget, almost $1 trillion a year, and they never say anything about that. They're against Social Security. They're against any manner. I mean, they benefit from a system in a disproportionate distribution of income, and then when the government says, well, gee, maybe we ought to help some of these poor people with Medicare, or we ought to have Social Security for their old people.
Or extend their unemployment benefits.
Or extend their unemployment benefits, they say, no, we don't want to do that. You know, we don't want to be taxed. We don't want to have to pay the non-producers.
They say it just like that, too.
They are some mean-spirited people.
And they also, twist the evil mustaches. Yeah, I understand.
They do. Like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're with us.
Can we all agree, though, that, you know, so there is nothing wrong with social programs, in my estimation.
Good.
But, I mean, when something is just, you know, it's almost destined to fail.
What is?
Social Security.
Is not destined to fail at all. I mean, it's got this enormous reserve. The reserves may be gone in 20 or 30 years if we don't do anything about it, but all we would have to do was remove the cap on payroll taxes, and it would be all paid for in a second. I mean, the payroll taxes right now, it stops at $105,000. So if you make $30 million, you are paying payroll tax on $105,000. You and I assume, unless you're very wealthy, we pay on the full amount of what we make. some of these people are making, and I'm talking about wealthy people, not necessarily talking about teabaggers, but, you know, there's no problem with Social Security. It's worked for 70, 80 years. The other thing we could do, maybe the baggers are all about this, is that when you got old, we'd send you to the poorhouse. That's what they used to do.
Hey, doesn't that sound like fun?
Yeah.
Not particularly. And also, one more thing real quick.
Sure.
You know, I heard you talking earlier about the new energy plan that the Obama administration is actually, you know, they're trying to get pushed through Senate or Congress or whatever it is now.
Not a hell of a program, but anyway.
Yeah, I think that we all need to be very careful that they do not add or morph this into a cap and trade. Site deal. Well,
okay.
I think that's basically it's the next corporate scheme on getting rich, selling absolutely nothing.
Well, it could very well be. No, I mean, what we ought to just say is zero pollution, no nuclear power. We go to alternative energy as quickly as we can. Has to turn Detroit back into an industrial producer of solar panels rather than having it all go to China. I know somebody from. Actually, he is a somewhat famous drummer in Detroit, and he is now working at in another city because the jobs and what his end of things, the what he does, is he can't get work here. And they make solar panels, except they make the solar panels in China, like them.
Really?
All right. Thank you very much, Barry. Thank you for joining the show. By the way, I forgot this too. Direct action gets satisfaction. How about this? Whereas we grumble and grumble, I can't believe what school costs.
As in college?
In college, yeah. One of the things we could do with the bloated military budget is make sure that college was free, just like high school is free. A lot of colleges used to be free. And one of the things that's happened, one of the good things the Obama administration has done is taken on the student loans so the people won't have as much debt as they have. But here, students gain after strike in Puerto Rico. In thousands of students at the University of Puerto Rico who went on strike 2 months ago to opposed severe budget cuts declared victory on Thursday after reaching an agreement with administrators. They had a deal that ended their strike, one of the largest and longest such walkouts in Puerto Rican history, in exchange for a number of concessions. Most notably, the University Board of Regents has agreed to cancel a special fee that would effectively have doubled the cost to attend the university's 11 public campuses. So, So
it can happen.
Direct action. Get satisfaction.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you don't have coverage, listen to this. AccuQuote can help save you up to 70% on a term life policy that's right for you. Pick up the phone and call AccuQuote at 800-654-2075. AccuQuote has helped hundreds of thousands of people save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how. AccuQuote monitors hundreds of top-rated life insurance products so you can get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. Rates for women are even lower. A short 5-minute call is all it takes. Call AccuQuote for a free life insurance quote at 800-654-2075. Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Find out how much you can save on life insurance. Call AccuQuote for your free quote. 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075. Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
101 WRIF.
The Riff.
Hey, this is Lars from Metallica.
Hello, this is Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Hello, this is Brian Johnson of AC/DC. And you're listening to Detroit's home of rock and roll, WRIF.
Everything rocks. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
When I do it, I feel the blood rushing through me. My muscles tighten, and I keep going back for more.
Carmen Castillo is under the influence of Dana, her volunteer trainer.
Come on, Carmen, again.
By spending one day a week in the gym,
tuck your chin, Carmen.
Dana helps neighborhood kids like Carmen develop interests that keep them away from drugs.
Hey, let me see your shoulder shift. Jab, jab. Great.
Be a coach, a mentor, a volunteer. No matter what it is, you have something to offer.
Cool workout, Carmen. See you next week.
Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313 and be an influence on the kids in your community. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom? If I'm at soccer practice,
what if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of an emergency.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Red Defender, thank goodness you're here. That huge asteroid is headed right towards Earth.
I'll handle this.
Like an arrow shot from a man-sized bow, the Red Defender hurtles into space using his super strength to stop the asteroid.
He's stopping the asteroid. It's moving away from Earth. You saved us. How did you do it?
I just stopped the asteroid and reversed its course back into space.
Look, the moon. It's... exploded!
Where exactly did you throw that asteroid?
Away. I threw it away.
No more moon. That means no more tides. Tides are created by the moon.
And no more walks in the moonlight. I love walks in the moonlight.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. To find out more, go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debt for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
We'll be right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julian Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome to our final segment. A couple of interviews that I recorded earlier in the week will be played at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. And we have some email from our pal Ron Paul Rick.
We do.
In Eastport. Oh, I bet you want your mic up.
Yeah, just kind of click that. That'd be great. Okay, yeah. So, hey guys, the Tea Party as it is today has been taken over by the hateful, warmongering, Christian Zionist status quo Republicans. Then he goes into the paleocons and the neocons. U.S. paleocons hate those bastards as much as you do. Oh, you progressives do. P.S. Love Code Pink.
This is amazing.
Ron Paul Rick.
Yeah, Ron Paul Rick. I said to him one time, come on, man, you know, if you're really down with Ron Paul, you got to come to this anti-war demonstration, and he did.
He did, right on.
It was raining and everything. So, now, speaking of conservatives, this is incredible. They're talking about trying to create a Ronald Reagan Day. Right? I'd rather have a Ronald McDonald Day. At least that helps the kids, right? February 6th, 2011 is the 100th anniversary of the birth of Ronald Reagan. So what? While the official Ronald Reagan Centennial Commission is planning its festivities, conservatives will try to turn it into a full year of celebrating, honoring, and capitalizing politically on the legacy of a decidedly mediocre president. Now, he's worse than that. This is by Bill Berkowitz, who writes for BuzzFlash.com. BuzzFlash.com. It's a good website. I get a lot of information from there. Now, Ronald Reagan, right? Reaganomics. This is why we are in the shape we are, economically and now environmentally. This was the guy that didn't want to have any regulations. He didn't want these corporations hobbled by government regulation. When a man comes to your door and says, I'm from the government, you know, you got a problem. Well, we have a problem because a man didn't come to the BP door and say, I got like hundreds of regulations because there's a chance you could destroy, end life in the Gulf of Mexico. So Ronald Reagan is one person we have to thank for the BP spill. He also was really good at union busting. I mean, these people have no loyalty whatsoever. These kind of conservative airline pilots. What was it? PAC? Or wasn't it something like that? Pilots? I don't know. But they backed Reagan for president in 1980, and then he had them all fired.
Nice.
Yeah. Then, and also, all this illegal activity, violation of the Constitution, violation of law in the Iran-Contra scandal, and there were more people indicted from his administration than, I can't remember when, maybe it was the most in history, or he was right up there. So this is this thoroughly horrible regime of Ronald Reagan, and they're talking about having a Ronald Reagan Day? Of course, I don't know. Would we get the day off?
Peter.
Well, we don't want the day off ever.
Right.
But Jillian and I, we only do this once a week. And so when they say, okay, you got the 4th of July off, which we will, right?
Yeah.
And we go, oh, no, I want to broadcast.
Yeah.
I enjoy this.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, Ron Paul Rick, come on down to the Heidelberg Project today at 11 a.m.
We'll be there.
Well, not at 11 a.m.
A little later in the afternoon.
4 p.m., right. And they're going to be burying a Hummer with a ceremony. And then Tuesday, 3 p.m., Warren and Woodward. This is the beginning of the United States Social Forum for the next 5 days, where there's 20,000 people going to be in Detroit trying to solve the problems of this city, this country, and this planet. Now, it's a big undertaking.
Sure is.
But hey, we're going to give it a whirl.
Yeah, it's better than just sitting down and doing nothing, right?
Absolutely.
Way better.
Right. All right, let's take some whoa. Jack from Thompsonville has been waiting a long time. I'm sorry. Welcome, Jack.
Hi, calling right outside of Gary, Indiana.
Okay.
And just wondering about this oil spill here. If there's any environmentalists that would call in and maybe tell people how long that would take to clean up, or if it ever could be cleaned up. I don't know.
There you go. I think you might have the last part of it could be correct. This Prince William Sound, where the Exxon Valdez spilled all this oil, it has never recovered.
Really?
Fully. Not fully.
Do they have animals there that live
I think
there?
So, I think some are coming back, but it's nothing like it was. I mean, it's yeah.
Makes me sick.
Yeah.
And this could be, you know, they're talking it could be hundreds of millions of gallons. I mean, this might be near ending.
You know, and I'm not a big religious person by any means, but I know in the Bible, in Revelations,
yeah,
it says the sea and the ocean and all the water will be blood.
Wow.
And what is, and I'm thinking the blood could be like, what is blood, but oil is like the blood of the earth, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
That's what, I mean, this could really be coming true. I mean, I'm not.
No, I hear you. But you know, we're
into the Bible, but I'm telling you, this could be the end of the start of the end for us, man.
Well, you know, Jack, how we want to keep our blood inside of us?
Right.
Well, probably be the best of ideas to keep the earth's blood inside of itself and stop trying to get it wherever we can. All right, thanks for calling in from near Gary, Indiana. Gary, Indiana, it's another what they call sacrifice zone. The pollution is so terrible. And it's interesting, what I said earlier about the Detroit incinerator, how it was sited in a poor area, but its plume went over Grosse Pointe.
Into Windsor. Which is, for people who don't live here, is a wealthier area.
Yeah, that's unusual. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number, and here is Adam in Romulus. Adam, hi, it's Peter and Jolene. Welcome.
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, it's just a matter of time before they want to put Reagan on Mount Rushmore, right?
Yeah, right. Well, hey, these Reagan nuts,
True. They
want something in every county in the United States named after Reagan.
Yeah, there's an organization working toward that.
That does it. And they want to get a coin. I want to have Ray Charles on a coin. But go ahead.
Well, anyway, the reason I was calling is before the last break, you mentioned, I think it was in Panama, some of the students doing protests over
tuition
hikes there.
Puerto Rico, excuse me.
And, you know, it kills me because, you know, I'm 22. I'm a recent MSU grad, just walked in May. And, you know, the recent Tom Izzo ordeal, if you recall, where, you know, he's going to go to Cleveland. And you should have seen the massive, you know, not protest, but like mass action. People were putting signs up saying, "We aren't Izzo."
And we're talking over sports.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And the thought that went into my brain was like, where is all this mass action for things that actually really matter on college campuses today? And I tell you, I don't see it. As someone who spent the last 4 years at MSU, there may be token protests or group action about things going on campus, but you'd never see it more than 20, 30 people. I mean, the Free Press just had an article either today or yesterday about how MSU is going to bump up tuition rates 2 or 3%. I'm going to be drowned in. I've got $20,000 in debt coming out of college. And to me, you know, and it gets the bigger thing about my generation, and I hate to say it about my generation, but we don't have that. I mean, we had it with Obama, but, you know, it seems like there's this hangover after 08 where we're not, you know, especially on college campuses, where are the people, instead of saying, "We heart Izzo," which I get, it's a big deal, he's our coach, but we're the ones saying, no tuition hikes, you know, no hidden charges, no...
I remember when I went to Michigan State, and, I mean, a couple of times.
You were there, too?
Yeah, I did. It was football rallies when it looked like MSU was going to a Rose Bowl, and, you know, there would be thousands of people out in the streets, and then we'd have a demonstration about...
there'd be 10.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I went to football games and all that, and I agree that... but I know exactly
totally
what you're saying.
Point.
But, Adam, if you want to have an increased positive view of your... of your generation, come down to some of these this United States Social Forum stuff, because it's heavily youth oriented, and great numbers of the people that are coming are in fact people in their teens and early 20s.
Yeah, and that's great to hear. And like I said, you just don't see it enough. You know, like I'm a big Verge guy, and
sure. The mayor of Lansing
for him now, and yeah, Verge Bernero, and I don't, you know, there's just. It's good to see people my age, but, you know, when you look at campaigns nowadays, like I said, aside from Obama, it tends to be older people. And I just, it's good to hear, and you guys have been talking about it all night, about, you know, people my age getting involved. And it frustrates me when I see people, especially, you know, either people who are upper middle class, higher income, it just seems to go way over their heads, you know, issues that, especially in this state, poverty, unemployment, for them, it goes right over their heads.
I just don't say that. They don't think they care.
Well, it's kind of hard. I mean, you have to have some venue, so what they call some agency, for to feel that actually, if you move into that, that it will actually matter. I mean, it did. People knew that you could. There's like almost like some social magic, like in the 1960s, the 1930s, stuff like that. It just happened. The civil rights movement. Why didn't it happen in the 1940s? The civil rights movement. Why didn't it wait? Something just happens. Well, this United States Social Forum that's going to begin this Tuesday. Tomorrow, we're in Monday already.
Actually, yeah.
This could happen. All right, Adam, I'm going to have to move along real quickly because all of a sudden I'm looking at the clock and I got lots more callers. So thank you. Come on down to the, you can go to USSF2010.org and there are like enormous parties. What's it called? The Leftist Lounge. Might be too much techno for me.
Ah, no.
No, you don't think so? A little techno. So
it's going to be a hoot nanny, remember?
A hoot nanny. All right, yeah. Here's Seth in Oakland Township. Hi, Seth. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter, Jolene. How are you this morning?
We're good.
Great, thank you.
Before I get to my point, I just want to thank you guys. I've been listening for probably over about 10 years now, when I was in high school and now as a young adult. And yeah, I don't classify myself as a very political person, but I really enjoy the views that you guys offer.
Well, thank you.
And your perspective on certain things just makes me kind of look at things in a different light than when GN, CNN and whatnot, you know. But I really appreciate your show and I appreciate what you do. But my point was, I read the article today, forgive me, I don't know if it was the Free Press or the News, but about the most polluted zip code in Michigan,
right,
being obviously down there by the plants and whatnot, and I read the article, it kind of sickened me, and it all kind of ties into this, you know, what you guys were talking about, big corporation and laughing at the little guy that, you know, well, what are you going to do? We're going to plop shop right here, and if it destroys your home and your health, then
too bad.
So be it.
Too bad, yeah.
And reading it, the one family had several members that had been diagnosed with cancer.
That was awful.
And they're saying that they wake up and it looks like there's snow on the ground and it's the middle of summer and it's this mysterious ash that comes out of the sky. And it just sickens me because, you know, we as the United States reach out and seem to always want to help other countries or other, you know, situations. And obviously, you know, that's part of our, I guess our MO over the past is to help, but we seem to turn a blind eye when it comes to the people that are
right here, right here in our area. And here is the thing. I mean, this gives you an idea. We're supposed to be a democracy, whether we say we're a democracy or a representative republic or whatever. We're supposed to be empowered as people. Well, there's no one, unless they are insane, in those communities that are suffering that kind of damage to their property and, to most importantly, to themselves and their children, would want to be in a circumstance where they have that kind of pollution. And so that means, essentially, they are powerless. They are powerless. And but there are people with power that are saying you are going to live under these circumstances. Now, the cold-hearted conservatives say, well, why don't they move? That would be a horrible thing to say, even in the best of times. Well, in the worst of times, I don't know if this is the absolute worst time, but in bad times like we're suffering now, particularly in poor communities, because there it really is bad times. Bad times usually, and it's awful times now, that they can't move. So they're stuck there. So they are people, they might as well be in a dictatorship because they have no control over their own circumstances whatsoever. But pardon me, a lot of us don't, because do we have any control over the value of our homes dropping? Do we have any control over the cutbacks that are taking place in city services? Do we have any control over whether we're going to have a job tomorrow or not? This is because we are controlled by elites. And one of the things that the United States Social Forum is all about is to end this democratization, if you will, of the American public. So we have this facade of democracy, but it is elite control. And can a group of 20,000 people meeting in Detroit over this next week make a difference? Well, we can make a difference in this is where we're starting. All right. Thank you very much, Seth. I appreciate it. Let me go through these calls kind of quickly because we're almost out of time. Here is Don in Detroit. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good.
I've been listening to you since you were on like five nights a week in the 70s.
Oh, wow.
Right on.
Wow.
Anyway, I'm talking to you on an Obama phone. You're talking about that Nolan Finley talking about the free cell phones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what it's like one of those track phones you get in a dollar store for like $10.
Yeah.
Oh, have you seen the commercials for these, Peter?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't get
them. You get like 68 minutes a month, and then they're always calling you, wanting you to buy more minutes. So that 68 minutes is just, they figure most people are going to use that up.
I thought it was a scam, yeah.
So they can just, you know, it's like a come on kind of. And people call it, yeah, they call it an Obama phone.
Really? Oh, my gosh. Well, don't spend too many minutes right now.
Well, I got a landline.
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't really use it that much. But my landline, I used to get $10 off the landline, but they made me give that up to get this.
Wow.
To qualify. So I'm bankrupting the treasury with this thing.
Man, man. All right. Well, Don, a good sense of humor helps some, although it doesn't pay the bills. And I see you're calling from Detroit. Well, this is all happening in Detroit this coming week at Cobo Hall. The whole joint has been rented, Hart Plaza, then except for tonight where they're going to have the fireworks. So, hey, rock on. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here is Mike. Mike, hi. Where are you calling from? You're on the air. Mike. Hey, Mike. Mike's not there. We'll put him on hold. And, oh, we can't end the show without having Maurice from Detroit on the air. Maurice, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Peter Jermaine.
Hi,
Maurice.
Talk about the violence in Detroit. Well, Wednesday morning, I was a part of that violence at the CVS of Michigan and Martin. You know, you go up to the cashier, one of them, this dude came up there on the side of me yelling and stuff. They wouldn't serve him because he did something. He wanted me to buy him beer. I told him no. But make a long story short, he pulled when he got outside, he pulled a 6-inch blade out on me.
Uh-oh. I didn't get most of that, but that's bad.
That's terrible.
I pulled out of him. We did. He didn't cut me. I didn't cut him. And he went home.
Well, you got to get a little more powerful machinery there. Just pull out the Roscoe, man.
I could have shot him. I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, no, that's
bad. I don't
bad.
Think Maurice with the gun's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, all right, Maurice. You got to stay away from those.
We're glad that no one got cut.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, this is important. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up?
Nothing much. George Bush was involved in this oil spill. How?
I think that you remember Halliburton, right? Halliburton.
Was Cheney, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Halliburton was involved in the original pact to the Iran crap that went down, right? Is that you understand what I'm saying?
Go ahead.
And then now, all of a sudden, Halliburton is involved in this oil stuff.
Yeah, where's Dick Cheney?
There's three companies involved in this oil stuff. There's three of them. And one of them is Halliburton. And you're trying to tell me that George Bush is not involved in this?
Hmm.
I would like to see somebody that says that he's not involved in this mess. And I guarantee you they're a bunch of liars. Because I'll tell you what right now. George Bush has decided to bring Obama down in his own way. Oh, I'll just throw my money out there. Oh, I'll just blow the golf up, make a big mess out of everything, and make everything Republican again in 4 years.
Wow. Well, could be. All right. Thank you. Here is Scott from Westlands. You have about 60 seconds. You got to give me just a headline, something I wonder whether you're capable of. Go ahead.
Okay. there's been a new development in Michigan's marijuana laws, particularly the medical marijuana law. So recently, with regard to operating a motor vehicle, Michigan's law was zero tolerance, meaning that if you had even a detectable amount of THC in your system, that basically you were considered DUI, or driving under the influence, or driving while intoxicated, et cetera.
Right.
And you're subject to all kinds of very extreme penalties if you're involved in, say, a fatal accident or something like that. The good news, that was a 2006 decision. The good news was that the Michigan Supreme Court, and I only heard this on the news myself, that they apparently reversed themselves on that. Now, basically, there's still no threshold of intoxication for marijuana. Because, see, ironically, alcohol is one of the few drugs that actually has that, where they actually specify how much is in your bloodstream, you know, and, you know, there's a limit, you know.
Well, whatever. I think it is best if people do not are not intoxicated in the slightest while doing motor vehicle operations. All right, we got to go. If you want to go to the U.S. Social Forum today at 11 o'clock at Heidelberg and Mount Elliott, the Hummer is going to be buried. You can go to codepinkalert.org. You can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. All the information will be there. You can
Medea Benjamin coming on the show tonight as well.
You can go to United States Social Forum's website, which is USSF2010.org. Could be the start of something. If not, if not now,
it'll be a damn good time.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to be down there. Come on and join us.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief, 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
STV. They're coming. August 26th to the Fox Theater, and The Riff has your tickets. Listen all day today as 101 WRIF will be blowing out your free tickets to
Our son would go from "Good morning, Mom," to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope.
My name is Mary Tadigan, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
One in five adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
Deep growing experience. These grow wizards really know what they're doing. They have what you need to be successful growers. With high-tech grow lights, custom design and built grow rooms, advanced nutrients, free grow seminars, and the best prices around. Come see for yourself. Get a complete grow system starting at $490 plus tax. Mention WRAF and receive 10% off your purchase. Open 7 days a week. Indoor Garden Superstore, 2570 Dixie Highway, just north of Telegraph in Waterford. Call 877-22-HYDRO or visit Indoor Garden. GardenSuperstore.com.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. The question of race is something that's been with us since the origins of this nation, since the Euro-Americans came here, bringing slaves very early on. Slavery enshrined, unfortunately, in the Constitution of this country, the foundation document, a necessity to have a union with the southern states that held people as chattel slaves. Through the Civil War, of course, the states' rights that they talk about was the states' right to hold people in chattel slavery, people of African descent. A civil war in which more Americans lost their lives than all the rest of the American wars combined. Then segregation, then the civil rights movement, and perhaps one would say the final resolution of this with the election of a black man to the highest office in the land, Barack Obama. So, done deal, right? We should move on. Post-racial. I mean, who's going to still talk about race? Except, we know there's a few crackpots among us, but those are the people that don't like gays and don't think women should be in the workplace and all that. So they're a tiny minority. Or are they? And what's the deal here? Well, a book from a man who has just done so much with this question. The book has come my way. It's called Colorblind: The Rise of Post-Racial Politics and the Retreat from Racial Equity. The author is Tim Wise. It's published by City Lights Book. And Tim Wise is an anti-racist essayist, an educator, and activist, and he's written four previous books, one which I've read, White Like Me, Reflections on Race from a Privileged Son. We reached Tim Wise at his home in Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you very much.
Well, all that said, most people think, the only people that are still talking about race are those older folks who can't get over it, and perhaps people that quote, play the race card. In other words, we're over that. Would you say no?
Well, you know, the thing is, we have to put this in some historical context. I mean, all of the periods that you were mentioning in the intro, talking about the history of racism in our country, during all of that period, white Americans, by and large, and I'm one, white Americans, by and large, didn't think there was a problem even then. I mean, you can go back to the early 60s and look at Gallup polls in 1962 and 63 at a time when, in retrospect, we all know we were a profoundly unequal, really apartheid country, and yet the vast majority of whites, between two-thirds and almost 90%, depending on the way the question was worded, told Gallup pollsters that black folks had fully equal opportunity with white folks. So even when it was blatant, most whites didn't see a problem. So I think we have to keep in mind, just because folks don't see it, don't think it's a problem, that's always been true. And in every generation, whites have said that and have been wrong.
Well, Tim Wise, you're in your material I get with this, it says you've spoken to hundreds of thousands of people, contributed essays or chapters to more than 20 books, and that you've been doing this for 20 years.
Right.
As a white male, as a, what I sometimes call a Euro-American, why not take care of some other biz in this country?
Well, for the same reason that there had been white folks all the way through American history, going back to the colonies before we were even a country, who realized that racial inequity against peoples of color, our brothers and sisters on this continent and really around the world, is something which not only harms them and is a moral and ethical issue, but frankly weakens the fiber of the society in which we live. I mean, the history of racism in the United States has made us a worse-off place. I live in the South and have grown up here, and, you know, even if you're up in a place like Detroit or Chicago or New York or anywhere in the country, you can see the way that racial division and racial inequity has harmed everyone. It ultimately brings down the strength of the economy in the South. You know, we've had weaker labor unions and weaker working class solidarity because white folks were so busy trying to keep black folks out of the neighborhood or try to keep Latino folks off the job that they ultimately undermined the ability of working people to come together and fight for better wages for everybody, fight for better health care, better benefits. So really, racism and racial inequality and ongoing racial disparity robs the whole country, including those of us who are white in the long run, of the economic, the cultural, the social vitality that we'd otherwise have. So I think it's very much something that white Americans need to think about and care about.
Well, you're posing it to some extent, and understandably, in self-interest, that everyone has a self-interest in equality for making what this country says it's about actually be about. Is there an ethical and moral consideration to this? Because certainly the people, the whites who were in the anti-slavery movement before the Civil War and the people that acted against segregation, the whites involved, the people that went to the South, lost their lives, were jailed and all that, they in many ways were motivated not at all by thinking, well, wait a minute, we're getting hurt by racism. There is a profound ethical component to this.
I think there is, and I don't think they are in any way in conflict with each other. I mean, the activist of the civil rights struggle and the abolitionist movement did, in fact, I think, understand the commonality of interest and even the so-called self-interest. But the ethical piece is huge. I mean, for us to stand by, for any human being to stand by, while other of our human family are being oppressed and marginalized and given less opportunity than we have, is to implicate us in that tragedy. And I think the ethical piece for me is that you can't be an innocent bystander when others are being marginalized, whether it's on the basis of race or whether it's on the basis of class or gender or sexual orientation, because at any given point, that could be us. And if we believe that ethically we would want folks to stand with us, then we have to be prepared to stand with them. And I think in the very short period of time that we have on this earth, there are very few ways to sort of earn one's life, to earn one's time on this planet. And I think fighting for justice and fighting for equity is certainly a pretty good way to spend at least some of that time. And thankfully, there have been people throughout the history of our country and other countries who have done that. And some have been, obviously, most have been, when it comes to race, have been of color. But there have also been hundreds and even thousands of whites who have done the same.
Well, I think you know the book by the historian Howard Zinn. It's called You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train. So, that's always an important concept. The book is Colorblind, The Rise of Post-Racial Politics and the Retreat from Racial Equity. Well, certainly one thing that you hear when, and it's peculiar if you're a white person, that oftentimes people that hold racialist or racist views, maybe we can even, if you think there is a difference, get into what the difference is, that doesn't occur to them that that you might not hold those same prejudicial views, and they'll frequently speak their mind quite openly, something they wouldn't do in a mixed situation or even in a work situation.
But
that is that. Wait, we're talking about a people that, that the call that Tim Wise, you and other people, myself, are uttering actually is special pleading for people of color. Look, we've had the civil rights movement. We have a black president. This winds up to still be, like an excuse, the race card. You've heard all this. So how do you look at that?
Well, in the book, I have a significant portion of the book, the second chapter, most of it actually, details in great detail with substantial footnotes, studies, references, the evidence which suggests that racial discrimination is not something which was a problem 30, 50, 100, 200 years ago, but is in fact ongoing in housing, employment, education, and in healthcare, and that the ongoing discrimination against people of color is robbing black and brown folks in this country of wages that they otherwise would have, wealth that they otherwise would have, and even health outcomes that they otherwise would have if they were being treated the same as whites. So indeed, not only is it not playing a race card, in fact, most of the time, we hear very little about the ongoing problem of race as myth. Anything, that's the card that we end up holding very close to the vest for fear that it won't be taken seriously, even though the evidence is overwhelming. I also think, in reference to what you said, you know, the ability of members of the dominant group to downplay the problem or to say that, well, the president somehow, you know, wipes the slate clean doesn't make any more sense than it would have made, let's say, if we were to go back to Pakistan in 1988, which was the year that they first elected a woman, Benazir Bhutto, to be the head of state. And then if someone were to have said back then, well, that just proves sexism is no longer a problem here in Pakistan, and girls and women are treated fully equally with men in Pakistan or England or Great Britain or Israel, all of which have had female heads of state. Clearly, it's not that it's meaningless for those places to have had a woman as the head of state, and it's not meaningless that we have a man of color here as president, but it certainly doesn't necessarily tell us anything about the larger systemic reality, and that's what I try to document in the book.
In Colorblind, published by City Lights, a wonderful publisher, by the way, and it's wonderful that your book is published by them. Let's go back to what you were saying about class and self-interest, that we all have a self-interest in living in an equitable society, but I'm not sure everyone sees it like that. If you have a class society where you have rich and middle class, working class, and poor, the first way that the inequality of wealth and wages is going to be distributed is on the basis of race. Right. So in a period of economic contraction, people are losing their jobs. I mean, I could imagine it that would occur to white people, the less competitors I have in the job market, you know, if we got rid of women, if we got rid of blacks, we got rid of gays, we got rid of Mexicans, it'd just be the white guys that got access to the jobs.
Well, that's certainly one way of looking at it, and historically it's certainly true. When you don't have to compete against all the other folks, 100% of what's there is going to go to people like you. But the downside of that, really, is that when you have millions of people in your country who are, within the next, let's say, 30 years, going to be about half the population of the United States, if that half of the population continues to have one-tenth the wealth and the assets of the other half, twice the unemployment rate of the other half, three times the poverty rate of the other half, 9 years less life expectancy than the other half, the reality is you cannot maintain a healthy economy like that. You cannot possibly provide economic opportunity or a healthy civic society or economy for anyone, including white folks, when you have that level of disparity. Every study that has been done, I don't mean some of them, I don't mean most of them, I mean every single one around the world that has been done has found that the greater the level of inequality in a society, whether we talk in economic terms or caste or racial terms, the greater the overall problems that the entire society faces, the worse off everyone is in terms of health outcomes, in terms of life expectancy, in terms of the quality of education, in terms of economic sustainability. So really, even though it means more competitors, even though it means you don't get 100% of everything, the well-being of people of color is intimately bound up with the well-being of white folks. We just cannot sustain a healthy society, a healthy economy on the backs of white people alone. It just can't be done.
Well, one dreads the thought of what I call the Guatemala model. That is to say that a third of the people are well-waged. That's where the majority of work and commodity consumption circulates. You almost see the beginning of that now with that concept of whitetopia, where white people are beginning to kind of get their own little enclaves so it'll all work there. And then the bottom two-thirds, which will probably include a lot of white people as well, whether is it sustainable? No, it's a prescription for having authoritarian government, police repression, police and army repression, assassinations, and all of that. But what you're talking about, Tim Wise, has almost a revolutionary content to it, which I am all in favor of. But getting people to see beyond the individual, their individual circumstance or their neighborhood or whatever is pretty tough. That's what you're about, right?
Well, it is tough. And look, we've got all of us have been subjected to so much conditioning around these issues that it's going to take a lot of work for us all to undo it. And one of the points I try to make in Colorblind is that this isn't about the good people over here who get this already and the bad people over there who don't. Really, we've all been subjected to intense racial conditioning, intense stereotypes in media. I mean, the data, for example, that I cite in the book demonstrates that the overwhelming majority of white Americans and even large numbers of people of color have internalized anti-black bias and pro-white bias, even though outwardly they don't necessarily manifest overt racism. So if you do a survey, most white folks are not going to seem or answer questions in a way that demonstrates overt bias. But then when they've done and constructed these really quite interesting experiments and studies of subconscious bias, they find that we virtually all have internalized some of that because we've been hit with that since we were kids. To unlearn that is going to require some real conscious effort on our part. The good news is, and I cite this research in the book as well, the evidence and the studies have found that we can, in fact, fight that racial conditioning as long as we're conscious of just how severe it has been and as long as we are committed to checking it day in and day out throughout the course of our lives. So we can fight back against it, but you have to be aware of the problem before you can do that.
Well, the subtitle of your book, Colorblind, says the rise of post-racial politics and also the retreat from racial equity. When there are so many young people that seem to have successfully entered that era where they, you know, that we see these in statistics that this isn't an issue, race, yeah. That your sexual orientation isn't an issue compared to, like, you know, the older folks.
Right. I think we have to be very careful, though. I mean, one of the studies that I cite in the book, and there are others that say the same thing, has found that although younger people are certainly more outwardly open-minded than their parents' or grandparents' generation, when you get down to it, they have a significant amount of racial bias as well that they will express in private, perhaps not in public. So one study, for example, that was done by two sociologists who wrote a book about this 2 years ago, they actually had 626, I believe it was, college students around the country do an experiment where they were asked to keep journals for, I believe, like a six-week period or something. And during the course of that 6 weeks, the instruction was that they were to write down, these were white students, they were asked to write down every instance in that 6 weeks where someone in their social circle, a friend or a colleague or someone on the dorm hall floor at the college, made a racial comment, told a racist joke, or acted out in some way that was racist. At the end of the 6 weeks, they gathered up these journals. And these were just average, everyday white folks. They weren't activists that were being asked to keep these things. It was just average students. When they turned in the journals and the sociologists looked through them, they were able to find 7,500 instances collected by these 626 people in just 6 weeks that were blatant. I mean, these weren't even close calls. These were blatant racist jokes, blatant racist comments, blatantly racist incidents that they had observed and witnessed. So we're talking about, for each of these young people, a couple of times a week amongst their peers seeing this kind of behavior. So it says to me that even the young, who maybe outwardly have learned how to keep that stuff tight and sort of close to the vest, that it's still very much a part of their conditioning too.
Racism, or race, let me put it that way, is a very strange thing. There was this little item in the media about President Barack Obama, who listed himself as an African American as opposed to mixed race. Usually, ethnicity is traced through the mother. Like, for instance, among the Jewish population, if you have a Jewish father and a Gentile mother, you are not Jewish. If you have a Gentile father and a Jewish mother, you're Jewish. Right. So Barack Obama, you know, why isn't he white? You know, that
well,
he had a white mother.
They're very specific religious, and I'm Jewish, and actually my mother is not Jewish, so I wouldn't be considered Jewish in Israel, I suppose. But
right.
But that's that. There are very specific sort of scriptural reasons and long-standing religious reasons that I don't happen to think are all that valid for why we in the Jewish community do that. But the reason that Barack Obama calls himself African American is the reason that most all folks who are a mix of, let's say, black and white, do that. And that is because in the society, and we need to keep this in mind, race is not biologically very meaningful. I mean, the differences between us scientifically are very small. But socially, to be a mix, let's say, of white and black is almost always going to mean that offspring, that child, if they are dark enough to be seen as something other than white, will be treated as the non-white portion of their identity. Because race socially is about how you're treated. It's not about what you are, quote unquote. I mean, I always love it during the campaign when people would say, well, Barack Obama, you know, he's just as white as he is black. Well, yes, in terms of lineage, but not socially, because, and here's the example I use, you know, Barack Obama went to Columbia University for the last 3 years of his undergraduate college degree, and the only way that it would be true to say that he is just as black or just as white as he is black is if you can envision him standing out on a corner in Harlem where Columbia is located, trying to catch a taxi cab to go downtown to Greenwich Village, and 50 out of 100 times that he did that, the cabbie looked at him and said, wow, look at that white guy. And the truth is, that isn't going to happen. Sure. Barack Obama would be seen socially as black, or at least as a man of color. And so because of that social truth, most people of color who are of quote-unquote mixed parentage or mixed lineage will choose to identify as people of color because they understand that socially that is how they've experienced the society. It's not really disrespectful to the mom. He has written glowingly about his mother, about his grandparents. But at the end of the day, he knows that socially to be black and white in this country is to be black.
Which says, of course, that race is a social construction.
Right.
Yeah, that it's nothing permanent, indelible, or anything like that. The attributes that we adhere to, it can be reversed. That's part of what your book, Tim Wise, Colorblind, is all about. Papa Doc Duvalier, I don't know if you've ever heard this anecdote about they asked him what percent of Haiti was white. This must have been in the 1960s or so. And he said 90%. They said, no, we said white. He said, oh, no, we have the same theory as you do. If you have one drop of white blood in you, we consider you white. I mean, he was making fun of the idea that the single drop of blood concept here, which is biological nonsense as well, but socially, it's powerful, right?
Right. It's very powerful socially, and that's really the way in which it matters. And I want us to really understand that. You know, the reason that we have racial disparity in our society is because those people who have been identified as something other than white have been consistently, throughout the course of our country's history, given less opportunity, less access, and now we are reaping the outcome of that. I mean, we've just come out of a 20th century in which, and this is important for us to think about right now, the government of the United States intervened in the economy to not only hurt black and brown folks, but to benefit whites, intervened with the FHA and the VA loan programs that people of color were virtually excluded from the 30s through the early 1960s, in places like Detroit, in places like Chicago, all over the country. You had tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars in housing equity being loaned preferentially to white working class families to help them become middle class at the very time that people of color were being barred from those efforts. And so we have to understand, and this is critical right now, as you have, you know, Tea Party folks running around saying, you know, that they just want small government. Well, the truth is, government was never small for those of us who were white. It always intervened on our behalf. It was only when the government began to intervene to try to equalize opportunity that suddenly a lot of white Americans discovered their inner libertarian and decided they loved the free market. The free market is not what white folks were relying on with the GI Bill, the FHA, the VA loan, the Homestead Act, all of these things that government did to provide access and opportunity to some, even as it denied it to others.
Tim Wise, we just have a few minutes left. You've spoken to hundreds of thousands of people about race. So what is the most disturbing trend and the most heartening trend when you speak to people directly?
Well, the most heartening trend is that I am seeing over the last 10 to 15 years an increasing number of folks, including white folks, who are willing to really examine this issue of institutional racism and even their own white privileges to try to create and really push for a more equitable society. I'm seeing a lot of that among younger folks and even not so young folks. So that's obviously a heartening thing. On the bad side of things, you know, I think we're experiencing sort of a perfect storm for white racial anxiety right now that folks like the Tea Party folks are taking advantage of, not just a black president and a faltering economy, but also a demographic shift that in 30 years, as I said before, will make the country about half white, half of color, which for white folks, you know, for some white folks is very scary because it sort of, you know, unsettles our notion of what an American is. We've had the ability to think of ourselves as the prototypical American, and now we're having to share that designation with people who not only look different, sound different, pray different, maybe their first language is not our first language, and so there are some white folks for whom that is unsettling. And then we have a popular culture that is thoroughly multicultural and looks very different than the one a lot of white folks used to be used to. So I think when you put all that together, it is a particularly combustible combination that folks like the Tea Party with their, you know, I want my country back mantra, are prepared to take advantage of, whether they use overtly racial themes to do it or just subtly coded racial themes. So that obviously disturbs me.
I don't think the 1990s were the golden age, but certainly it's been mythologized as such. But since September 11th, there's increasing, I think, social exhaustion and anxiety. And now, of course, the anxiety about the economy is so great that asking people, asking white people to take on something else that doesn't even on the face of it, although I think you've eloquently spoken to why it is, to take on yet another crusade, I don't know. I mean, in some ways, I'm not very hopeful about it, but I mean, I'm hopeful that people pick up your book, Colorblind, and begin to consider those things. But what would you say to those people that just say, well, one more storm, as you said?
Absolutely. Look, I know there's only 24 hours in a day and 7 days in a week, and that doesn't change. So it's hard to take on new stuff. But I will say this, and this is something to think back on as we move forward. Had we, let's say, as a country, 15 years ago, when the subprime housing market crisis began to emerge in black communities and in Latino communities and in poor communities, and that's when it started. 15 years ago, this stuff was beginning, and people were warning about it, and a lot of folks said, well, that's not me. It's not my neighborhood. You know, it doesn't affect me. That's their problem. And so we sort of turned our eyes, and a lot of white folks and middle class and upper middle class folks, regardless of color, said, why do we need to care about other people as long as we've got ours? And I don't want to put one more thing on my plate. Well, 15 years later, we see that the rot of subprime lending in the mortgage market spreads throughout the economy and ends up hurting everyone. So the idea that we can afford to have this attitude of, you know, I'm not my brother's keeper, I'm not my sister's keeper, I don't have to worry about what happens on that part of town or in that city or in that community, I think is now being shown with this economic situation to be a faulty mentality. And so if we don't want to repeat the mistake that we're right now living through, we need to begin to embrace solidarity and start to realize that those folks' struggles are our struggles, and if we don't join them, we're all going to go down together.
The book is Colorblind, The Rise of Post-Racial Politics and the Retreat from Racial Equity. The author is Tim Wise, and it's you can go to citylights.com. It's published by City Lights Books, and you can go to Tim's blog at redroom.com. Search for him by author's name, W-I-S-E. It'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Tim Wise, thanks for joining me on the program.
You bet. Thank you.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Do people sometimes describe you as a saver? A bit frugal, penny-wise, and somewhat thrifty?
You know, cheap.
If that sounds like you, you're going to love the newest addition to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Coupon crazy!
At MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, you'll still find great gift certificates for local businesses with goods and services on sale for more than half off. Find money-saving online coupons that you can download right now and start saving immediately. Log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and save big.
With online coupons from Autolab USA, with over 20 locations in the Metro Detroit area and a 12,000-mile, 12-month warranty. Hagopian Rug Care Center with 5 locations in Metro Detroit. They're the leader in carpet, rug, furniture, and tile cleaning.
If you're looking for ways to enjoy life and stay within your budget, then go
coupon crazy
now at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. That's MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online home for great ways to save big at local Michigan businesses.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're 2 payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronix Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
time.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronix is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Detroit's Rock Station. 101. The Real Riff.
This is your Biotech Minute. Biotechnology, a big word for an area of cutting-edge science that is improving the world we live in. In health, biotech provides breakthrough therapies and treatments for devastating diseases like cancer, MS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and HIV/AIDS. Biotechnology is also helping farmers produce more crops from existing acreage, reducing fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions, and it's creating fuels from renewable green energy sources like algae and plant waste. And this is just the beginning. The biotechnology research being done in laboratories today will improve the health and quality of our lives and our world for generations that follow. Biotechnology, helping heal, fuel, and feed the world. A public service message from this station and the Biotechnology Industry Organization.
Jeez, Q, it's hot as in here. What's going on?
Oh, it's only 91 degrees.
Where? In the refrigerator?
Ouch! The countertop is so hot you can fry eggs on it. And bacon and home fries. Are you on that sweat diet? No.
I'm melting my life away.
Hey, by not running my air conditioner, I'm saving energy and helping the environment.
Uh-huh. There's an easier way to help the environment. Go green. Go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you don't have to sweat it, if you know what I mean. So you got any eggs?
No.
How about shrimp? We can fry shrimp. Do you have any shrimp?
No. I have anchovies.
Mm-mm, no.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Play ball! Now pitching, Dave Black.
Dave is about to catch his opponent off guard. Not with his nasty fastball, no. Instead of a fastball, Dave will be hurling a tomato.
And the pitch.
Ooh. Using tomatoes as baseballs won't go over well with anyone. But if you're looking to hit the ball further and throw better, eating a healthy diet that includes fruits and vegetables is a home run. Packed with nutrients, they could help keep your body healthy and strong, giving you the energy you need to hit that grand slam. When you look at it this way, eating tomatoes is playing hardball against the competition. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov.
That's smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. I wonder how many of you remember Acorn. I mean, we have a very short historical memory, so it wasn't that long ago that the organization, the poverty organization, the anti-poverty organization and organizing group was just blown out of the water by a scandal. In fact, that's probably the, I would suspect, if you've heard of Acorn at all, that is what you know of it, particularly if you're watching Fox News. This seemed to, to them, typify everything that was wrong with the Democrats, with voter registration. They were accused of all sorts of voter fraud and registration and what have you. And then, poof, they just disappeared like that. Actually, the group has been around for almost 40 years, and it's an incredible story. A story so complex, large, interesting, that a book of some size has come out. The author is John Atlas. The book is called Seeds of Change, The Story of Acorn, America's Most Controversial Anti-Poverty Community Organizing Group. And the author is John Atlas. He's a longtime public interest lawyer. He's also a writer and an organizer, and he's founder and current president of the National Housing Institute. Institute. It publishes Shelter Force. His work has been in numerous national publications, including the New York Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer. Those are, of course, city-oriented. The Newark Star Ledger, Tycoon, The Nation, Dissent, The New Jersey Reporter, and Social Policy. And let's welcome John Atlas. Hi, John. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I was trying to think, you know, how could I give a shorthand definition outside of the recent controversy that sank the organization? Maybe a good best place probably is you, John Atlas, in your book, Seeds of Change. What was Acorn? Give us a sort of a thumbnail sketch of it.
Well, it began in 1970, and for 40 years it was a major voice for the poor, organizing to make banks and insurance companies more responsible to their communities, passing living wage laws in dozens of cities, building low-income housing, registered millions of low-income minority and young voters, and at its peak, it was an organization that existed in 38 states, 700 neighborhoods, over 1,000 employees, and 400,000 dues-paying members. And it's the most interesting thing about it, I think, from a American institution point of view, is that it took a local community group. You know, there's lots of local community groups doing very good work trying to help the poor. But they took a local group and turned it into a national organization that was capable of not only helping the poor locally, but as well as winning national changes such as an increase in the minimum wage. Acorn Forced was the major force behind pushing George Bush, for example, to sign an increase in the minimum wage in 2007 against his will. Hmm. That gives you some sketch. A very complex story, though.
Sounds pretty good on so far the core definition. And they had a chapter in Detroit, as I remember, that did work here among.
Let me comment on that, because before the axe fell, Michigan Acorn once had offices in Detroit, Lansing, Saginaw, Flint, Grand Rapids. So they were many neighborhoods. And at its peak, it had more than 20 full-time staff, represented 10,000 dues-paying members around the state. And they were responsible for helping, for example, thousands of people get their taxes filed. And they were very much involved in saving families from foreclosure. I think they saved about 75 families from having a foreclosure by negotiating mortgage modifications with the banks and also finding other kinds of income assistance so that they could pay their mortgage. And, of course, they registered, I think, at one point over 150,000 people registered them to vote. So, yeah, they were very active, very successful, a very good chapter.
Well, let's talk a little, and you discuss this in the Seeds of Change. I mean, here you have all these positive aspects to ACORN, the organization, the anti-poverty organization, bringing more people into the democratic process, in protecting the poor, aiding them in getting more income and what have you. But we've seen that before, where sometimes organizations start off with the best of intentions and then become sort of internally corrupt. And that's, I guess, what the conservative criticism of it was, that it actually, maybe you could tell the big spectacular manner in which many people know of ACORN. So that maybe the critique would be, yes, they were doing good work, then they began to kind of go down the way so many other groups do. And that's the conservative narrative. Does that make sense? Sense to you?
That's the conservative narrative. And in my book, I take very seriously the accusations that were made by conservative groups and Republicans, because I'm writing this book in sort of real time, you know, and I'm following Acorn locally and nationally and seeing the good work it's doing, and then I'm seeing some of the criticisms of Acorn. They were criticized for their public philosophy of pushing too much government. They were criticized for violating the law when it came to voter registration, and voter fraud accusations were made. They were accused of stealing money and being a corrupt organization. And I tried to give all the accusations careful examination. In fact, I read more conservative blogs and criticisms of Acorn just as much as I did positive things. Of course, and also I was watching them locally do things. I followed their members. So this is a very, very careful, serious look at them.
We're reaching you where? New Jersey, are we?
Yes. I'm in New Jersey now, but of course I traveled all over the country and followed its leaders, its organizers. And by the way, I want to say that for people who are listening, that the book is written like a novel. It's not an academic book. It follows the organizers and leaders in their struggles to save neighborhoods, the ups and downs of it, so that I could give readers a sense of what community organizing was, how that we all could help deal with issues of poverty and strengthening democracy. So I don't want anybody to get the impression that it's a hard-to-read book.
It's Seeds of Change, the story of Acorn, America's most controversial anti-poverty community organizing group. The author is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show, John Atlas. It's published by Vanderbilt University Press. There'll be a link on my site, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, to go directly to it, or you can always just Google John Atlas, Seeds of Change. I suspect, and I always hope that a listener is kind of holding in abeyance, when I've heard a lot of bad stuff about Acorn. Here's John Atlas just laid out all this good stuff. Maybe some people even know that. But usually people suspect where there's smoke, there's at least a little bit of fire. Because ultimately you come out on the positive side of Acorn and its accomplishments. But what about the smoke? And is there any fire there that warranted essentially the destruction of it? That's what finally occurred. There is no more Acorn in its former manifestation.
Well, first of all, let me answer the question about where the smoke. Yes, Acorn had problems. I mean, this was an organization that grew very rapidly in the last, from 2000 to 2008. And it grew primarily because it was so effective. But as it grew, it had difficulties adjusting its supervisory system, keeping up with basic management techniques to track income coming in and income going out. And it was a very complex organization. I mean, you can imagine managing, like, you know, an organization with 700 chapters, 38 states, thousands of employees, ramping up for voter registration programs, hiring some 13,000 people to do it, in the most effective voter registration campaign ever done in America. So they had some problems internally about how to manage such a large organization. It also, there was an embezzlement scandal that was covered up. Those criticisms are all true. However, you name me an organization that's perfect. There doesn't exist any. This wasn't a perfect organization. And when it came down to the charges of committing any crimes, well, it turns out despite dozens of investigations against Acorn for violating, for example, voter registration fraud, they all came up zero. They've never been indicted for voter registration fraud. They haven't been accused of a crime, and they certainly haven't committed any criminal act. So that turned out, the voter registration thing turned out to be a big a lie.
That was the deal where individual registrars, people that went around to get to register people, were putting down phony names. Wasn't it out west, like in Colorado or California?
That's right. So what happened was they ramped up for the most effective voter registration campaign in American history, really. But in the process, a few of their employees, part-time staff, ended up cheating Acorn. They went out and tried to beat the system by not really registering voters and then getting paid for it.
In other words, they had these phony names, ones that were obvious, like football stars and movie stars.
Exactly, football stars, Mickey Mouse. By the way, Mickey Mouse, it turns out, never actually showed up to try to vote.
Well, I was going to say that, because even though they registered phony people, it's not like anybody could vote in their place, right?
Yeah, now I want to emphasize, it was just a few people who did this out of the enormous numbers who were doing voter registration. But Acorn actually had a state-of-the-art supervisory system. This was one of the things they were actually strong on. They had an excellent supervisory system, but by law, they are required to turn in any registration that anybody they hired did. So they would, as soon as they saw like a Mickey Mouse or a famous football player or the Cowboys, they would highlight this, they would put them in a separate pile, and then they would tell the registrars, we don't think these are good. But by law, they had to turn them in. What happened was mostly Republican activists reported these to the news, and the news immediately saw a sensational story. Oh, voter registration, a sensational story. Oh, voter registration fraud by a community group. And so the news, the mainstream media, went wild with that story. Most of the time when they reported that story, never even talked to people from Acorn. They just wanted to have a quick, human interest story, which, of course, ended up defaming Acorn. But there is no truth to the fact that they did anything criminal at Acorn itself. The staff was fired. They reported them to the authorities, and they also reported the defective registrations to the registrars.
Yeah, and there's been even a recent investigation that cleared them. They've been investigated any number of times. There's never been criminal investigations. But I think what really sunk them in many ways in terms of public perception was the pimp story. I wonder if you could repeat that. And I know in your book, John Atlas, Seeds of Change, that you take that on as well.
Yes, that was the beginning of the end for Acorn. What happened there was two conservative activists had decided they were going to get Acorn because they were angry at Acorn. They hated Acorn. Actually, before I tell you that story, what your listeners need to know to understand Acorn is that you raised the question, why were conservatives so angry at Acorn? Who were these conservatives anyway that were so angry? Well, there was a number of them. One, so you can understand the motivation. One, businesses that paid poverty wages were angry and wanted to attack Acorn because of Acorn's support of increasing the minimum wage, increasing the living wage. And by the way, Acorn in Detroit was responsible for one of the groups that helped push for an increase in the state minimum wage in 2006. So that got a lot of businesses angry, especially the restaurant and bar business. Then there was, of course, the predatory lenders and the banks who were discriminating against the racial minorities and the poor. And they were angry at Acorn because Acorn was forcing them to provide below-market fair credit for mortgages, home improvement loans, and to build housing. So they were angry at Acorn. But the group that was most ferociously angry at Acorn, of course, was the Republican Party. And for decades, the Republican Party has been after Acorn for its voter registration campaigns. This is not anything new. So you get the concept?
I do, indeed. They've gotten some powerful enemies.
Right. So here comes the 2008 election. And who is the Democratic candidate? None other than this fellow Barack Obama, that most people had never heard of. But the conservatives in the right wing who had been following Acorn, they immediately latched on to the fact that Obama had a close relationship with Acorn since 1996. So immediately they thought Obama's evil, Acorn's evil, they're a cabal. One of the right-wing bloggers called this before anybody even knew about Acorn. They were calling Obama the president of Acorn. So the grassroots support for McCain is out there on the hustings, yelling at McCain while he's campaigning, what about Acorn? What about Acorn? Of course, he's probably scratching his head, I know he was, saying this is ridiculous about Acorn. But he had so much pressure that finally he went on television in the last debate and attacked Acorn. I don't know if you remember this.
I refresh our memory.
The third debate, he turns to Obama and he says, I'm paraphrasing, what's your relationship with Acorn? And this is a group that is destroying the fabric of American democracy.
Huh.
And you can imagine the leaders and activists of Acorn are falling off their chairs watching this on TV, thinking, my God, we just got attacked. You know, we're a big group, but we're not that big. We're kind of small, actually, in the scheme of things. So this, again, stirred up the base. And so people like James O'Keefe and this woman he was with who were going to try to embarrass Acorn because they hated him. They literally hated him. And they, not because they wanted to help the poor or correct any injustice. So they were going to disguise themselves as pimp and a prostitute, enter their offices, and see if they could embarrass them. Well, they did this with a hidden camera. They did this. They went into a couple of the offices, 10 of them exact, and the woman looked like a prostitute. The man walked into the offices like a, you know, sort of a college preppy with a dress shirt and slacks, and they tried to induce Acorn's employees to say something stupid. Well, what you saw on TV, of course, on these tapes, was Acorn staff looking like buffoons, seeming to advise these two video gotcha people that they were going to help them build a brothel. It turned out that none of it was true.
Hmm.
That the tapes were highly edited, doctored, misleading, and that, first of all, they went to 10 offices, and only 3 of them could you say there was even a possibility that the advice you saw them giving on TV was actually what you saw. But in most of the offices, the videographers were kicked out. The staff of Acorn called the police, and even in one case, they escorted the prostitute, the so-called prostitute, to a counselor saying she needed help. Of course, none of this was broadcast on television.
Sure.
And, of course, everybody remembers the man looking like an outlandish, cartoonish pimp with the fedora, the dark glasses.
Sort of Superfly from the early 70s or something, yeah.
Exactly. Well, it turned out that was edited into the tape after the tapes were done.
So this is a gigantic fraud.
The story is complete fabrication.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yet, the mainstream media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, all reported it as truth.
And CNN and other cables, certainly Fox, broadcasted it repeatedly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Once that happened, it triggered a a response by Acorn supporters and the Democratic Party, foundations, and liberals, and they began withdrawing support. Acorn's name was defamed, and the rest is history.
Yeah, well, the history is were they receiving government funds? Because didn't Congress have a vote on Acorn?
Okay, that's a good story, too.
But you know what? We've got 4 minutes left, John Atlas, so
okay, well,
let's... I'll
tell it real quickly.
Okay.
They were accused of misusing federal funds by the Republican Party, and that was one of the reasons why Congress defunded Acorn. Just Monday, the Congressional Accounting Office, which is the government watchdog, did a thorough investigation of Acorn, and guess what? It turned out they never misused any federal funds. They spent them appropriately.
Well, to use a word we were just mentioning before, the way people say in Detroit, maybe elsewhere, Acorn got pimped. They weren't pimps. They got pimped. So here's this organization that fought for truth in lending, decent mortgages for poor people, a minimum wage, tried to get as many people involved legitimately in the electoral system, and they're gone. So the Republican effort was successful. Is there anybody or anything left to pick up the pieces?
Well, first, and I would add that they got thrown under the bus by Obama, the Democratic Party, and many of their friends.
Yeah, they're kind of wimps, aren't they? They get
they don't stand by people. Acorn, that's the bad news. The good news is that the old Acorn organizers and leaders are reconstituting themselves in 17 states. They're going to use all the techniques and strategies that helped build Acorn into a large organization. They're going to correct the mistakes that Acorn made, make sure their organizations are stronger internally, better supervision, accounting procedures, etc. But they are all independent at this point. And I think they're going to, because I think they're going to grow. I think they're going to be effective again. I don't know whether they'll be as effective as the old Acorn, but they will use their techniques. And the model of the old Acorn is a good one, which is one of the points that I was trying to make in my book, Seeds of Change.
Mm-hmm.
People should see all the various techniques. One more thing, because this is Detroit. I know you're broadcasting Detroit. A lot of people don't know that Acorn created the first union that organized fast food workers, and it was in Detroit.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. You know, I try to keep my finger on the pulse of stuff like this, and I didn't know that. And that's one of the reasons I love this job. I learned so much from guests like you, John Atlas. The book is Seeds of Change, the story of Acorn, America's most controversial anti-poverty community organizing group. And we do have about a minute left, and I'm wondering how chastened the Acorn people that are reconstituting themselves are about, like, the Democratic Party. I mean, they got thrown under the bus. The federal funding that they were depending on got ripped out from under them. I wonder if this would have a different perspective, the new organizations that are forming.
They are very cognizant of what happened, but I can't tell you what their attitude is going to be toward the Democratic Party. My guess is that they're hoping that there will be a progressive movement that gets built in this country that will help organizations like them and like other people who have been, I would say, thrown under the bus, like Van Jones, who was the environmental leader for Obama. I guess the answer is we'll see. Maybe we can talk about it in 6 months and see what happens.
Well, I wanna...
Oh, and then, of course, I can't. I there was one thing that I always tell listeners and when I get on take these great radio programs is to urge your local bookstore to buy the book, because we're having difficulty getting it into the large chains. I hope you don't mind a little pitch.
No, go to your independent bookstore and say, hey, go to Horizons Book. Go to BookBeat, and I'm sure I'm missing some other great ones. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the program. John Atlas has been my guest. The book is Seeds of Change, the story of Acorn, America's most controversial anti-poverty community organizing group. And I was glad to see an endorsement from William Julius Wilson, who I've interviewed before. He's from Harvard University. He says, this is a must-read. The reader of Seeds of Change gains an understanding understanding not only of Acorn's success in the fight for social justice, but also why its efforts to empower ordinary people are viewed with alarm and have come under attack by conservative and reactionary forces in our society. To find this online, Google John Atlas, Seeds of Change, and by the time you see this, hear this, I will have up on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. I will have a link to it. John Atlas, thanks for being on my show.
Peter, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief, 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187. 101 The Riff.
This is your Travel Minute. If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into one 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your